Okay. Why don't we go ahead and take our seats and we'll call our meeting to order. Good morning, everybody. We'll begin with our invocation. It's my pleasure to introduce one of our colleagues, Council Member Jerry Allen. Jerry, would you lead us in the invocation, please?
Right. I'll be happy to. Please rise. Dear Lord, we take this time to give you thanks. We acknowledge that you are the creator of all. We know that you love us and that you're the Father, and as our Father, you have nothing but good plans for us. I ask that you bless this country. I ask that you bless this city. And I ask that you take the citizens and just put your loving arms around them and show the mercy and the kindness and the grace that you do every day. In your name, amen.
Amen. Mr. Tinsky, would you lead us in the pledge?
I sure will. To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, again, good morning, everybody. We appreciate you being with us. We'll begin with a special presentation, and it's my pleasure to turn over to Ms. Pauline Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. And before I start, welcome everyone. Welcome, colleagues. I want to let you know, yesterday around lunchtime, Disney Parks was in Dallas. We were selected one out of 30 cities to promote What Will You Celebrate? And we had a really big crowd at Pegasus Park. And we just wanted to say someone in the crowd won a vacation to a Disney park, and a couple of people won birthday celebrations also at for one of the parks as well. So we are very fortunate that we had Disney parks in our downtown. So we really were appreciative of Walt Disney. Today, colleagues, you know, during last week, during our retreat, I talked to you about, I presented you the Maple Avenue Initiative and what we're trying to do at Maple Avenue, not only to clean up, but to beautify and, of course, make sure that our public and our retail merchants on Maple Avenue understood the benefits of our new neighbors with Simmons Corridor, with the Medical District, and all our other new neighbors that we have in and around Oaklawn and the Simmons Corridor. So today here, instead of me doing or us doing a presentation, we have the president of the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Cici Rojas, and also Mr. Frank Ashmore, owner of Sunshine Cleaners on Maple Avenue, to do a presentation. Along with them, we have congratulations to Deputy Chief Malik Aziz from Northwest Division, if he will join us, along with Lieutenant Webb, Lieutenant Stokes, Lieutenant Overstreet, also Sergeant Fuqua, and Sergeant Deason, please. And I will leave the presentation to Ms. Cici Rojas and Mr. Frank Ashmore.
Thank you, Councilwoman, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for having us here today and able to present this terrific recognition. First and foremost, I want to commend the Councilwoman. It's because of her that the cleanup Maple effort is becoming very successful. We can see the results already. We know that an aesthetically pleasing and crime-free neighborhood means economic development. It means people will not be so cautious anymore to come shopping and to do many of the things that we need to do to build a vibrant economic environment for Maple Avenue. But I have to tell just a quick story, so indulge me. This is about a true crime stopper that we have here in our midst. And it's Councilwoman Medrano. I know she's probably too shy to say this, but about 2 months ago, I get a frantic call. And she's embarrassing. A friend called from her. I'm traveling, and she says, "Cici, somebody just drove a car into the front of the chamber building." And I'm freaking out. I go, "Really?" And she says, "She just happened to be washing her car right down the street, and she ran over." And she not only did that, I called her back, and I go, "What's going on? What's going on?" My staff's trying to get down there. Well, not only did she see this, but she actually chased
the perpetrators down to the Burger King and was on the phone the whole time, and she identified them for the police officers, and they were apprehended. So thank you very much. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Frank.
Don't mess with Pauline.
Good morning, and thank you again for having us, allowing us to present this presentation today. And thank you, Pauline, for all of your efforts in our area. My name is Frank Ashmore. My family has owned and operated Sunshine Laundry and Dry Cleaning on Maple Avenue for over 67 years. And we have seen many changes over the years, but there's one improvement that I think everyone should be made aware of. And that is the performance of the Dallas Police Department, Northwest Patrol Division, has been nothing short of stellar. Not only do the statistics show it down 37% overall in crime, but most importantly, we see it and we feel it every day. We do not see the prostitution and the drug deals that we used to on many corners. We do not hear of the thefts and the burglaries and robberies that we would hear of on a regular basis. We've seen a huge increase in police presence, not only of police just making the rounds, but police attentive to their surroundings. We are very grateful to their efforts and cooperation, especially Lieutenant Overstreet, who actually recently, as we were discussing things, the neighborhood items in the neighborhood, he was parked in front of our building, and this kid was trying to get in the parking space there and actually sideswiped Lieutenant Overstreet's car in our parking lot. Tried to get away, and boy, was that just the wrong thing to do. But making our neighborhood safer means that, you know, customers feel safer. It means tenants feel safer. It means that property and business owners feel safer, and which is critical to the success for all of us. And this recognition is the least that we stakeholders can do to the men and women of Northwest Patrol Division and for their hard work keeping our neighborhood safe. So, in appreciation of their hard work, we have the Certificates of Appreciation to the Northwest Patrol Division, 540 Sector, on behalf of us, the stakeholders in the Maple Avenue area. We do have certificates for the entire division. These are just some that we are presenting right now that time permits us.
Let me just say just a couple of words here for a brief second. The 540s, I'm the Deputy Chief of Northwest, and Councilperson Medrano, she is a true crime fighter. And everything that she's done out there in that neighborhood, people would say that she's always in a neighborhood and she's always visible. And I always see her and I always hear from her, and sometimes 24/7 around the clock. And she's out there, and sometimes I get scared for her. I feel she's out there, and she's rolling down an alley somewhere. And really and truly, you don't find better people than this. And this is what it's all about, that the engagement of council members in that neighborhood and her holding us accountable and me holding my guys accountable. But the Northwest Division, just because I'm the leader of the Northwest Division, it isn't me who actually does that work out there in the field and every day. And these, a couple of the people who you see standing here, they are the ones responsible for lowering crime and making things happen out there in the 540s and especially on Maple Avenue. So we share in that success, and I just want to thank you for hosting us here and having us here with the Chamber. And Ms. Medrano, we really appreciate it for recognizing us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Councilmember Medrano, and Chief Aziz, for the opportunity for us to be here before the council today. And I know I received many phone calls from Mrs. Medrano also on my cell phone, and they're welcome telephone calls, because that's what we're here about, is to lower the crime in the city, and especially to help the neighborhoods in which we serve and the citizens in which we serve. And I thank you for having us here this morning. Thank you.
Awesome. I just want to also thank Mary Sim, Northwest, has gotten their Sky Tower, and that has made a tremendous difference. We borrowed it from Northeast, so thank Northeast. It made a tremendous difference. It showed the neighborhood the commitment that the police department, the city of Dallas, had for Maple Avenue. And, you know, our paddy wagon, we appreciate that. When we're going to get it, we're going to get that next month. And we will see a tremendous decrease in crime again on Maple Avenue and the surrounding area. So thank you very much, officers. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. You have the support of our community. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ashmore. Thank you, Sissy.
Thank you.
While we're doing that, I would just mention, too, just kind of an overview standpoint, homicides in the city are running about 25% down from a year ago. Aggravated assaults are down 17%, and we're probably one of the few cities in the nation that will actually see a near double-digit decline in crime this year.
Congratulations to the Northwest Division. It's great to hear the initiatives that you're working with, Ms. Medrano. And, of course, it's great to have a colleague that is so active in crime fighting as well. Our next presentation this morning is going to be presented by Councilmember Dave Newman and accepted by Stephen Mansfield, Pete Schinkel, and John Ford. And I'm going to ask them to come forward so they can be recognized.
Good morning, colleagues. Good morning. Yes, I would like Mr. Stephen Mansfield, Pete Schinkel, and John Ford, and Levi Davis to join us this morning at the podium. Come on. Don't be bashful, guys. Good morning. Good morning, colleagues. How fitting it is to have a recognition ceremony for Methodist Dallas Medical Center right after Councilwoman Pauline Medrano's recognition of the service in the Northwest Division for a Police Department. And indeed, it is an honor to serve as the Dallas City Councilman for District 3 and to represent Methodist. There are several other community supporters within Oak Cliff that are here today. Would you please stand for a moment? Show your support. Oak Cliff is a unique community. Dr. Garcia, myself, are very proud to represent, thank you very much for being here also, very proud to represent Oak Cliff, and I appreciate the supporters being here today to show their appreciation for Methodist. Methodist Health Systems is indeed a critical building block for our community as a city and for Oak Cliff, and it's my honor today to read a special recognition signed by our mayor and then honor Methodist Health Systems. So allow me to read for a moment, please. Whereas for over 80 years, Methodist Health System has served as a beacon of health and hope to the people in North Texas. In fiscal year 2007, when it celebrated its 80th anniversary of providing quality health care, Methodist Health System contributed more than $66 million in uncompensated charity care, over $300 million in employee salaries and benefits to the local economy, and whereas Methodist Health System employs over 4,700 professionals, making it the largest employer in Oak Cliff, and was named one of the Metroplex top 10 best places to work for the fourth year in a row, whereas Methodist Dallas Health Center, which is part of the Methodist Health System, is located in Oak Cliff near downtown, and is the teaching and referral hospital, has provided exceptional clinical programs and services since 1927, and whereas Methodist Dallas Medical Center services include, now I'm going to have to be careful my words here, these are complicated words, cancer treatment, cardiology, day surgery, emergency trauma and care, gastroenterologic. Thank you, very good, you heard it. Well, got to go to the professionals. Intensive care, maternity, neonatal intensive care, neurocritical care, orthopedics, outpatient services, physical rehabilitation services, radiology, transplantation. Read this one too, please.
Bariatric.
Bariatric. I want to have it say it correctly. Bariatric surgery, urology, and whereas the Methodist Dallas Transplant Institute, I said the Methodist Dallas Transplant Institute, one of the largest and most active multi-organ transplant centers in the southwestern United States, performed the world's first successful heart, kidney, pancreas transplant in 1992, and whereas the Level 2 Emergency Department is one of the only three hospitals in Dallas to provide trauma care, and the newly renovated Level 3 Neonatal Intensive Care Unit serves as a referral center for more than 30 hospitals in North Texas. There's only two more whereases, so stay with me. Whereas in addition to being widely recognized for providing high-quality medical care, Methodist Dallas Center is the largest employer in Oak Cliff and is considered an invaluable asset to our great city's economic development and strong community ties. And this is the most important to me as an elected official, this last whereas. Whereas Methodist and its employees, and I said 4,700, whereas Methodist and its employees have consistently demonstrated their commitment to improving the quality of life of neighborhoods, the business community, and are counted on to be key leaders within the Oak Cliff community. And now, therefore, I, Dave Newman, on behalf of Mayor Tom Leppert, Mayor of City of Dallas, and on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition to Methodist Dallas Medical Center for its excellent services to Dallas. Please join me in a round of applause. We have Stephen Mansfield, who is president and CEO of Methodist. We have John Ford, who is chairman of the board, Levi Davis, who is a board member, and Pete Schinkel, who is chairman of the foundation. A few words, Stephen.
Thank you, Dave, and Mayor, and City Council. This is those are nice words. You can kind of boil that down into we try to take folks who don't feel so good and make them feel better. And we've been doing that for a little bit over 80 years, and we feel very blessed to be where we are and to be doing what we're doing, and we appreciate the honor. I'd like to return that by saying that I appreciate excellent governance, and we have an excellent board with Methodist, and it's what makes Methodist successful, but I think our city has a wonderful mayor and fabulous leadership on our city council, and so thank you for what you do. Sometimes your job is thankless, but we appreciate you very, very much. Some of you I know are very familiar with Methodist, others may be less so, and so I'd like to take just a moment and share just a few highlights, some of those that Dave mentioned, and a few others. We currently have three acute care hospitals and one rehab hospital. Our hospitals, one is only two miles or so from here, but our hospitals, with the exception of one, it's in southeastern Tarrant County, are all in the southern sector of Dallas County. We're currently constructing a hospital in McKinney, and we'll be announcing our sixth hospital construction project very soon. We have nine family health centers staffed by primary care physicians spread throughout the southern sector, and we'll be adding three or four new locations in 2009. Our hospitals have we have over 150,000 emergency room visits a year. We have over 350,000 patient encounters a year as outpatients. As mentioned, we do about 150 organ transplants a year. We deliver a good-sized Texas community every year with 6,000 new babies every year. And we stand along with Parkland and Baylor University Medical Center as Dallas County's only trauma centers. We were recognized this year and very, very humbled to have been so by Thomson Reuters as one of America's top 100 performance leaders among our 5,000 hospitals in America. And we were selected, and this was mentioned by Dave, but it's probably the most humbling of all to me. We were selected for the fifth year in a row as a top 10 employer in Dallas-Fort Worth, and we were selected as the number one employer among healthcare and hospital organizations, and that's by our employees. We employ 4,700 employees. We have over 800 physicians on our medical staffs, and I'm also thankful to this number. We have over 1,000 individuals, many of whom are from the Oak Cliff area, who volunteer at our hospitals week in and week out. This year, we added almost 400 new jobs, and we recruited 41 new physicians, and those 41 physicians, as they open their offices, are like a small industry in and of themselves because they employ about four people each or so, and so that's almost 200 additional jobs, most of those, again, in the southern sector. We have 75 young men and women, America's best and brightest, that are in various stages of their residency training. Most of those positions will remain in Dallas County post-completion. And as I conclude, I just would say that it's been a pleasure serving. We're very blessed to have, as I said, great board leadership. We have a wonderful medical staff. The health system is only as good as its medical staff, and we're blessed to have a great medical staff. We've got some passionate caregivers about what they do, and we're grateful to have each and every one of those. And so thank you for the honor. Thank you, Dave, for the recognition. Thank you, Mayor. And I'll close with a public service announcement to everybody. Be sure to get your flu shot. This is the season. You don't want to end up as a patient at Methodist Hospital unless you need to. But if you are sick, we hope you'll come there and let us take care of you. Thank you. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, and I just want to say, you know, thank you to my colleague Dave Newman for this recognition, to Stephen Mansfield, Pete Schinkel, John Ford, and of course Levi Davis. You all do a great job, like you just mentioned, the biggest employee in the southern sector, and with more people being employed every day that are staying in North Oak Cliff. So, Mayor, this is a great recognition, and of course, Methodist has always been involved in many issues in the community as well, and we appreciate that.
Elba, I have something.
Sure. Mr. Rosensky.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Garcia. Gentlemen, if you could just wait there for just a moment. I want to thank all of you. All of you are exemplary citizens, right? I want to thank all of you, but I especially want to thank somebody I've known for 65 years, and that's Pete Schinkel. We won't say what we did as youngsters, but let me tell you, we grew up about a mile south of here, more or less, a mile south of the city, but let me tell you, Pete has always been an unbelievable person for this city, even playing, and he just was a head above all of us, and I want to thank you, Pete, for everything you've done for all of you, but Pete, I've known you personally for 65 years. I want to thank you for everything that you've done for this city. Thank you very, very much, all of you. Thank you, Pete. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Rosensky. And I would also, Pete, with everything that he does in his community, too, he was also one of the big contributors in the back-to-school fair, made that possible. All these gentlemen are very involved in the community. I'd also tell you, there's been some times when I've been down at Methodist when we've gotten the call of one of our police or fire officers have been injured. And I can tell you that the people down at Methodist are just tremendous all times, especially at difficult times like that. So we appreciate everything you're doing. Could I ask Marco Galvin and Tanya McDonald to come up here for just a moment? Hey, Marco. Well, we all know how important education is and to keep kids in school. And one of the important aspects of that, especially as our world has changed and there's been less parents at home, is our after-school programs. These two individuals are involved in the Dallas After School Network. And that is a network that's provided significant leadership in trying to provide these after-school programs to not only give kids that educational boost, but more importantly, just to keep them in school and do it in providing a safe environment for kids to be able to study and get the assistance that they need. And we appreciate it. And with that, we want to do a special recognition and proclamation, and I'll read part of it. Whereas the Dallas After School Network has provided significant leadership in the area of community involvement in the education and well-being of Dallas's youth, grounded in the principle that quality after-school programs are a key to helping our children become successful adults, citizens of Dallas, and also standing firmly committed to quality after-school programs and opportunities. And whereas Lights on After School is a national celebration of after-school programs, on October 16, 2008, promoting the critical importance of quality after-school programs in the lives of children, their families, and their communities. And whereas more than 28 million children in the U.S. have parents who work outside their home, and 14.3 million children have no place to go after school. In addition, Dallas County only has enough after-school slots to serve about a third of the children who need after-school support. And whereas 85,000 unsupervised children in Dallas need more after-school spots created so that they will have a place to go when school lets out. Whereas the Dallas After School Network is dedicated to increasing the availability and improving the quality of after school options for Dallas area children, the City of Dallas is committed to investing in the health and safety of all of our young people by providing expanded learning opportunities that will help close the achievement gap and prepare young people to compete in the global economy. And there, now therefore, I, Tom Leppard, as the mayor of the City of Dallas, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim October 16, 2008 as Lights on After School Day in Dallas. It is a terrific effort. We are looking to celebrate it. It will pull in over 1,000 kids at the Dallas Zoo, which is coming up to celebrate that special event on the 16th. And we just appreciate so much what you do in the community in general, but especially on these after-school programs. You're going to have a terrific day to tomorrow, I know, and we're just excited about what you do.
Thank you so much, Mayor Leppert, and all of the council for having us here today and for recognizing such a special day in certainly the life of our organization, but in the lives of all these children here in Dallas. After school primarily serves three functions. It keeps kids safe. It is a huge asset and support to working families in our communities and all communities, and it also inspires learning. And that last piece is such a wonderful piece to consider because it really is about quality. The Dallas After School Network, along with our 30 partners, really work to increase the quality and availability of after-school programs in Dallas and have them work more efficiently, leveraging one another's resources to provide better services, more complementary services to the great work done by our school district, by our community centers, by our churches, but also by our families. It's just a much-needed support. Life on After School is really an opportunity to do two things. First and foremost is to celebrate the great work being done by all these providers, and often doing so much with so little, but really with big hearts and making an enormous influence in the lives of these kids. And the other is bringing awareness to the need, the unmet need here in Dallas of, you know, currently 135,000 kids need after-school care every afternoon, and there's only space for a third of them, leaving 85,000 kids without supervised quality care. And that's an issue for all of us. But tomorrow on the 16th at the Dallas Zoo in the afternoon, we're going to celebrate the great work being done and give the kids a really good time. It's going to be a fun event with some fantastic speakers. No pressure, Mayor Leppert. You'll be fantastic. 1,000 5 to 12-year-olds are a better audience than you would think. But it will be a really fun event. And we would like to thank a few people that really made this possible. Mr. Caraway's office really was fantastic in helping us with transportation, and we just couldn't have gotten the kids without you, so thank you. City of Dallas Parks and Recreation has been instrumental. They're one of our members and has been supportive throughout the life of Dallas After School Network, and to really bring the event tomorrow, it couldn't have happened without them. And, of course, the Dallas Zoo being such a gracious and wonderful host. Huge treat for the kids to go out tomorrow. It's going to be a fun event. You all, council members, should have received invites, and we'd love to see you all there. It'll be a fun event. First year of many, so thank you all so much for recognizing this day.
Again, thanks to both of you. Let's get a picture, but I would say the after-school programs are so important. You mentioned the Dallas Parks and Recreation. Yesterday I had a chance to be at another effort, and that was the Impact Program. It is a program out at the Walnut Hill Recreational Center, and it is being led by our Parks and Recreation. We're providing facility and staff. We're also working with the Phoenix House, who's providing substance abuse. Senator Cornyn and Representative Sessions were instrumental in getting funding for that. We're also working with the Dallas Police Department, with the Dallas Independent School District, who are providing teachers to provide some of that after-school care. And it really is a terrific program. And then the Boys and Girls Club are doing the mentoring on it. So programs like this that give kids, again, a safe environment to work after school is so very important. We just appreciate what you're doing. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. And our next special recognition and proclamation this morning is going to be for Fire Prevention Month, and it's going to be accepted by our Chief of the Fire Department, Eddie Burns, and Chief Deborah Carlin. So if they can come forward so they can be recognized. Can you believe I didn't see you sparking? How did that happen? Well, good morning. Buenos dias. It's a pleasure, you know, this morning to present this special proclamation to a department that really takes care of the citizens of Dallas when it comes to fire. And sadly, every year we have a lot of fires in the city that could be prevented. And I know Chief Carlin is going to talk about that. And mainly, you know, we have a department that is involved in the community, that serves the citizens of Dallas, that it has many educational programs in our city. So I encourage all of you to go to our website and check a lot of the prevention programs that we have in this city for you. And they have done a tremendous job, and I know we're going to recognize them another time in those times when we really needed them the most. Chief Burns, you have a great group, and of course a great department, and they have provided a lot of relief with Storm Ike, and we will recognize your department for that too. But today is just Fire Prevention Month recognition, and we all need to be aware that fires happen and most of them can be prevented. So it reads as follows: whereas fire is a serious public safety concern to the city of Dallas, and homes are locations where people are at greatest risk from fire. And whereas Dallas had 1,123 home fires and 12 fire-related deaths last fiscal year, cooking is the leading cause of home fires and home fire injuries, and heating equipment and smoking are the leading causes of home fire deaths. And whereas every home should have a working smoke detector, in addition, the planning and practicing what to do in event of a fire and the implementation of a home fire escape plan can greatly lessen fire-related losses. And whereas education is the key to success, and it is important to teach the residents of Dallas that the prevention of home fires can be achieved by the incorporation of fire-safe behaviors as a common practice in their homes. And whereas this year, Fire Prevention Month theme, Prevent Home Fires, stresses simple, easy-to-follow behaviors that can save lives and reduce injuries from fire. Now, therefore, I, Dr. Eva Garcia, on behalf of Mayor Tom Lepper and the entire Dallas City Council, will like to herbly proclaim the month of October 2008 as Fire Prevention Month in Dallas, Texas, and urge all of its citizens to protect their homes and families by heeding the important safety message of Fire Prevention Month and support the efforts of our Dallas Fire Rescue Department in the cause of fire education and prevention. And it's signed by the Mayor of the City of Dallas. Congratulations to the Fire Department, Chief Carlin, Chief Burns, Sparky, you know, Chief Spike, you know, thank you for being here today, reminding us the importance of Fire Prevention Month. Gracias.
Thank you. Fire Prevention Month is a critical time for all of us here in the city because it gives us another chance to remember how we can impact our communities. And in fire, the best way to reduce the risk is through prevention, which includes education and persuasion, providing information to families so that they can modify behaviors in their homes. In Dallas, the most common causes of fires in homes are cooking, electrical equipment, and candles are fast coming up the road of things that we need to be aware of. We appreciate all of the information that our council members take with them to town hall meetings, to community events. I'd like to thank Lieutenant Shannon Hobbs, who's over in the corner over there, because she manages our education division, and those dynamic and enthusiastic people are really the ones who go out to the community to talk about fire safety every year. And of course, Sparky, we couldn't do anything without Sparky. He is by far the most popular member of our staff. We have good news, though. 5 years ago, Dallas had 18 people die in home fires. In fiscal year 06-07, that was down to 12. But better, this year that just ended, we were down to 11. And that is a direct result of educating our citizens on what they can do in their homes to make them safer. It is also a clear indication that smoke detectors work. In the past 5 years, through grants from the Center for Disease Control and from our very own Meadows Foundation, we have installed over 25,000 detectors in people's homes, 7,000 in the past year. We will continue those efforts, and we appreciate all of your support as you help us manage this risk problem every year.
Thanks, Dr. Garcia. Pauline, you and I are out real early this morning with Carolyn. What were we doing?
We were out making people aware, our citizens aware, of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we were joined by Councilwoman Carolyn Davis, and of course, your best part, your better half, Laura Leppert, and she's out in the audience. We want to thank everyone for joining us. We stopped a lot of people, and just a quick note, I actually, two cancer survivor people stopped and told me their story. One was a survivor for 11 months, and the other one was a survivor for a little over 5 years, but they told me their story, and it was just so impactful, and it just was worth it being out on the State Plaza at 6 o'clock this morning.
Should we get them up in your
room? Absolutely. If all of our group will join us, appreciate it.
And terrific. And a lot of these folks, Pauline said, are cancer survivors. I know one's cancer survivor nearly 10 years, just short of it, 9 years, 8 months, I think. And And then another 6 years plus. So it's just a privilege for Pauline and I to get a chance to be out with them.
Absolutely. And all this week we've been, of course, doing some radio spots and some interviews with local media as well. I want to tell you a little story. Just over 2 months ago, school that was named after my dad opened up. And it's the name is Francisco F. Pancho Medrano Middle School. And I got to meet the principal, Constance Ramirez. So dynamic, just so full of energy. And she just called me on Sunday that she was diagnosed with breast cancer. So all the more energy this morning. And I hope that you keep her in your prayers as she goes off to on medical leave this Friday. So the proclamation reads, whereas after skin cancer, breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. Approximately every 3 minutes, a woman somewhere in the United States is diagnosed with breast cancer, which is the second leading cause of death in women, while lung cancer is number one. Whereas an estimated 182,000 new cases of invasive breast cancer will be diagnosed among women, as well as an estimated 67,000 additional new cases of breast cancer in the United States during the 2008. And experts predict almost 40,000 deaths from this disease. 12,200 will be female Texans, of which over 2,000 of these Texans will die from the disease in 2008. Approximately 1,900 cases of breast cancer are expected to occur among men, accounting for about 1% of all breast cancers, and approximately 450 men will die from breast cancer. And whereas for more than 20 years, the National Breast Cancer Awareness Month campaign has dedicated itself to increasing public knowledge about the importance of early detection of breast cancer. The program's nationwide education campaign reaches out to the general public, city, state, and federal governments, healthcare professionals, employers, members of the news media, women, men of all ages, and of all ethnic groups. Whereas the City of Dallas Environmental and Health Service Department and the Office of the Mayor and City Council, in partnership with the American Cancer Society, North Texas Region, Robert Ashley Talk Show Host, Heaven 97 AM, Community Forum, Gilda's Club, North Texas, Bridge Breast Network, Methodist Health System, 94.5 KSOL FM, Flawless Hair Incorporated, Southern Methodist University, Walmart Supercenter, on East Oral Thornton in particular, continue to support and promote community health strategies to increase breast cancer awareness, and whereas early detection and prompt treatment can significantly reduce the suffering and deaths caused by this disease. Mammography, a low-dose x-ray of the breast, is the single most effective method of detecting breast changes that may be cancer, long before physical symptoms can be seen or felt. Whereas Friday, October the 17th, 2008, has been designated as National Mammography Day, and the month of October has been designated as Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which was established to increase public awareness of the disease. Now, therefore, the Mayor Tom Leppard, and on behalf of the entire City Council, hereby proclaim the month of October, 2008, as National Breast Cancer Awareness Month in Dallas, Texas.
Thank you, Councilwoman Medrano and Mayor Tom Leppard, and on behalf of the Bridge Breast Network and all of my colleagues who we are all in here together in this fight for breast cancer awareness. The other thing, you know, I tell people while we're telling people go out and get your mammograms, we have to remember the thousands of individuals who live in Texas who are uninsured. And our program assists those individuals who have either found a lump or been diagnosed with breast cancer and have no health insurance. We pick up the slack of those who might fall through the cracks from our county health system, which is already kind of pushed to the limit. We want to make sure that no woman suffers in silence or man who has found a lump has breast cancer. We will cover them from diagnostic all the way through their breast cancer treatment. Again, thank you. Thank you, the City Council. Thank you for this recognition and promoting awareness of breast cancer.
Real quick. I don't need a microphone. If you were out this morning on your way coming in, you saw these crazy, wild people in these American Cancer Society T-shirts. We hope we didn't scare you. We're just very passionate about finding a cure for breast cancer, and before we are able to do that, making sure that people are getting themselves tested through early detection. So I just wanted to take a very quick moment and thank a couple of people who were helping us. I'm losing my voice from all that screaming. Councilperson Linda Koop, we want to thank you so much for coming out this morning. We want to thank you so much for coming out this morning. She was out there on the DART bus passing out bags. Councilperson Carolyn Davis, and no, she's not in here at the moment, but she was out there as well. And, of course, Councilperson Pauline Medrano was out there as well. We passed out over 500 bags this morning in 2 hours. And also Mrs. Laura Leppard, who was out there with us. She's our just pride and joy. If you'd come up, we want to give this bag to you. And we're the American Cancer Society. We're a nonprofit, so we don't have a lot of gifts, but there are two other people that we didn't think about. But Mayor Leppard, we want to thank you so much. He was out on the DART bus this morning as well, gave everybody a message, did a couple of interviews with the media to promote early detection. And Gaitha Davis, come over. Everybody knows Gaitha, right? Come on, Gaitha. If it were not for this woman, we would not have this partnership every year. The American Cancer Society, we get the word out, but we need these partnerships. We need your help because, as we've all said, breast cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death among women, followed by lung cancer. and we have to get the word out. We need you all, every single one of you, to help us get the word out. So thank you, Gaysa. We appreciate it. Mammograms. Get your mammograms. Yeah.
And I want to recognize Charles and Vernon Durden. Not only are they out there, Charles, you've been out there a number of years, I know. They're both former city employees, and we appreciate you coming out too. Appreciate that. Before we let you go, there's also one person that we want to give a special recognition to, and that's Dr. Sally Knox. Doctor, come up here if you would. Dr. Knox is a physician. She's a surgeon involved in breast cancer, both from a clinical standpoint and research standpoint, which in itself is enough. But the reality of it is she's gone much beyond that from a professional standpoint and really reached out and touched people in some very special ways, starting some organizations that really, again, go beyond her professional practice. And we just, Dr. Knox, want to recognize you for that. And with that, we want to give you this special recognition. I'll read part of it. Whereas Dr. Sally Knox is a physician who has dedicated herself, both professionally and personally, to being a healer and helping those in need. A breast cancer surgeon, she has consulted with and treated close to 19,000 women and some men in her practice at Baylor University Medical Center. She's a graduate of SMU and the University of Texas Medical Center at Galveston, and she's a surgical breast oncology fellowship at Baylor. She's been in private practice since 1986, and she's also on the teaching staff of the Baylor Medical Center and also on the staff of Mary Shields Hospital. And then over the last 14 years, when groups have existed, she's formed a breast cancer support group for her patients, hiring and funding a professional leader and providing meeting space. The group still remains active with her funding and her support. And whereas in 1992, Dr. Sally Knox made a longtime dream a reality by founding the Bridge Breast Network, a nonprofit agency providing breast cancer diagnosis and treatment to women who lack health insurance. In the years since the Bridge first opened, it has grown in size and staffing, and has treated thousands of women, many of them, and treated thousands of women, many of them, for breast cancer. I think the passion, enthusiasm of some of your volunteers says much more than I could ever say. And then whereas, in recognition of her medical dedication and excellence, Dr. Knox has received the Moore Award from the Women's Center of Dallas, the Unsung Hero Award from Ladies Home Journal, and has been featured in articles in Good Housekeeping, the Dallas Morning News. She is also the author of several publications on breast cancer and is a well-known speaker on surgical oncology and breast cancer. And whereas her patients, medical colleagues, and the community at large, and stress that community at large, Dr. Sally Knox epitomizes the highest standards of medical care and morality in her devotion to saving lives and to the emotional as well as the physical well-being of her patients. It is truly an honor for the City of Dallas to take part in the celebration of such a special individual who has positively impacted the lives of many with tremendous care and devotion. Now, therefore, it's my pleasure as Mayor of the City of Dallas on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council to give this special recognition to you. And with it is a big, big thanks for all that you've done in our community. We appreciate Dr. Knox.
I just wanted to say thank you. I really highlight the Bridge Breast Center, which is a nonprofit organization that allows women that are uninsured to get health care. And when you know we're dealing with cancer, that's lives that are saved right here in Dallas. So that has been, breast cancer is a passionate issue. And it's just a pleasure to have been able to touch the lives of so many women here in Dallas County. And American Cancer Society has always been right there, helping us get the word out and helping women access care. So we thank you so very much. Thank you.
Why don't we bring everybody? Pauline, Linda, let's everybody come up for pictures. And then after that, Madam Secretary, it's yours.
You want a song? Thank you.
my best.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. We have several morning speakers this morning. Our first morning speaker is going to be Lily Tomlin, followed by Cora Kennedy. While Ms. Tomlin is coming forward, and you will stand at this podium, Ms. Tomlin, this podium there. While Ms. Tomlin is coming forward, let me recite the rules for speaking before you begin your speech. Citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council, or while attending the city council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the sergeant-at-arms is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. You have 3 minutes to speak. When you see the 30 seconds, you'll see an amber 30 seconds. That means you have 30 seconds left to speak. And then you'll see a red flashing mark that means stop. You state your name and your address for the record. And when you're ready, you can begin.
All right, thank you.
You're showing a film?
Yeah, I think what we'll do is go ahead, Ms. Tomlin, and show your PSAs, and then you'll have 3 minutes to speak. We'll show the PSAs first. That's for,
all right, thank you, Mayor.
Terrific.
And then start the 3 minutes, Mr.
Yeah.
Mayor. Okay.
Hi, I'm Lily Tomlin, and this is Jenny. Jenny's lived at the Dallas Zoo for 22 years on one-third acre of barren sand. She's swaying because she's miserable. Elephant experts worldwide are urging Dallas to send Jenny to the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee, renowned for healing troubled elephants like Jenny, for one chance to live in peace, roaming freely with her own kind. Please help. Retire Jenny. Contact Concerned Citizens for Jenny.net.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm Lily Tomlin, and this is Jenny. Jenny has lived at the Dallas Zoo for 22 years on one-third acre of barren sand, and she's swaying because she's miserable. Jenny has had a hard life, and she suffers from crippling depression. She needs to retire now to an accredited sanctuary that can give her the space, peace, specialized care, and rehabilitation that she cannot get at any zoo. The world's foremost elephant experts are urging Dallas to retire Jenny to the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee, a vast refuge renowned for healing troubled elephants like Jenny. Jenny could have a short, unhappy life at the zoo or a long, peaceful one roaming freely with those of her own kind. Please help. Retire Jenny. Contact Concerned Citizens for Jenny.net. And thanks for Jenny.
Begin. My name is Lily Tomlin. My address is 4375 Ethel Avenue, Studio City, California, 91604. Ladies and gentlemen, I've just become recently aware of how much elephants suffer in a zoo environment, and specifically of Jenny, or else I would have traveled to Dallas sooner to plead on her behalf. The thing that's foremost, imagine living your entire life locked in an empty closet, standing virtually in one place for decades, literally for decades, standing in unrelenting boredom and loneliness and aching pain with absolutely excruciating foot abscesses with no relief and no hope. For 22 years, this is how Jenny has lived at the Dallas Zoo on about a third or a quarter of an acre. Space equal to a closet when you're the largest land mammal on earth. For two decades, Jenny has eked out a miserable existence at the zoo in an enclosure that is antiquated and inadequate by modern elephant management standards. the AZA space requirements. The AZA is the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. Their space requirements for an elephant are equivalent to a three-car garage. Probably, I don't think a three-car garage is perhaps even as big as this center area. And that's the same thing as living in a closet for Jenny, who weighs 10,000 pounds. She's driven by emotional and physical pain. She's known to have broken steel cables with her head. She's self-mutilated with her tusks. She sways out of depression for hours on end, and she's often drugged to restrain her rage. And in fact, if you read Jenny's medical records, she has been drugged many times, once for 5 years running with such a powerful chemical that the USDA had to intervene. And her last medical records, published by the zoo, were for May 2008, and she was still being drugged. I've spoken to some of you by phone, and now being here with you and watching the procedures, a procedure which I've never witnessed before, I feel so much that if you truly were given the extent and the depth of Jenny's suffering and the circumstances under which she lives, you will make the decision to protect her and to save her from suffering any longer. Many zoos around the country have already transferred their elephants to sanctuaries because they know that an elephant cannot live a fulfilled life in a zoo. In the wild, elephants evolve to roam 30 to 40 miles a day. You've seen some of the pictures. They play, they forage in the woods, they roll in the mud, they swim, they pull up trees. That's one of their favorite things to do, small trees. And I mean, they are in constant mental and physical motion because they're so highly intelligent. And they live in tightly knit family groups with deeply, deeply bonded companions that endure for a lifetime. And this is something Jenny has been deprived of. These elephants communicate. They caress each other. They touch each other constantly, living freely as elephants are meant to live, with purposes of their own. And they are not, elephants cannot stand on hard, compacted surfaces such as concrete or the earth that Jenny stands on. If you're 10,000 pounds, you're going to compact whatever earth you're on if you're standing there day after day for decades. And Jenny lives alone in a barren, featureless enclosure. She stands in one place on that hard-packed stand. Her medical records, have stated that she has fallen to her knees.
Why don't you take about 20 seconds or so and try to summarize?
Okay. Mr. Mayor, excuse me. She's come a long way. Can we bend the rules a little and let her speak another 4 or 5 minutes?
Go another 3 seconds. Take another 3 seconds. Take about 30 seconds or so and just summarize.
Oh, I don't know if I can do it, Mayor. I haven't been funny for 10 minutes, and I...
You're doing fine.
Anyway, these elephants, I hope you're getting the picture. I mean, Jenny, in her medical records, it's recorded that she has fallen to her knees, screaming in agony because of her foot abscesses being treated, and one bout of this treatment has gone on for 6 months. She has had two friends who have died in the zoo, and she's been deeply distressed by these deaths. But if she were in a sanctuary, she would have had the support and the touch of other elephants to console her. Elephants live 70 years or more in the wild. In an AZA zoo, they live 34 years. Jenny is 32. And let me just say quickly, I know the city of Dallas would be commended for sending Jenny to the sanctuary. They're ready and willing to take her. They will pay her transport. It will cost the city nothing. You're going to build the other habitat, and that's a wonderful art. And it won't be finished for ever so long because you know how projects go. And it'll have overrides, I'm sure. But you could build this habitat, and then you could bring an elephant. Everybody could be upgraded. Jenny goes to the sanctuary. Some other poor, debilitated elephant that's chained right now as I'm speaking in some squalid little roadside zoo somewhere with absolutely nothing, not even a barren third of an acre. And then you could bring those elephants to Dallas. And I just want to say that I feel absolutely, if you could just identify with, just empathize with this creature's suffering, you will choose to do the right thing and send her to the sanctuary. And I'll just say one thing, because I know someone was expecting me to be have something enlightening to say, and I would say that the word zoo is elephant speak for Guantanamo.
Okay. Ms. Donald, we appreciate
thank you for your kind attention and the extra time, Mayor.
We appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Secretary?
Show me that you do.
Our next speaker is going to be Cora Kennedy. Cora Kennedy. Cora Kennedy. Edward Alonzo.
Good morning. My name is Ed Elizondo. I live at 2511 Wagelia Street in Dallas, Texas, 75211. I come here today to actively seek your support and solicit your support to rename Industrial Cesar Chavez. Reason for your support is that this will be the first major street in the city of Dallas to honor a Hispanic leader and hero who has nationwide recognition to include many major cities throughout the United States that have taken similar actions to honor a giant of a man. Another reason is that the renaming of Industrial Boulevard will honor the 20,000 plus Dallas residents who voted in the original survey where they voted 3-1 in favor of renaming the boulevard Cesar Chavez. To ignore the results of the survey will nurture a perception, a continued perception, in the Hispanic community that we are not treated equal in comparison to other groups. Moreover, it would set a precedent not aligned to the democratic process that we proudly promote as the best in the world. For your information, Cesar Chavez has a very significant record of being someone who took it upon himself to lead a national organized effort to improve the working conditions of all farm workers, regardless of race. Cesar Chavez is associated with civil rights, compassion, and peaceful demonstrations that taught people how to have a voice and bring about needed change. He actively advocated in behalf of farm workers for a better, healthier life for those that worked and lived under very undesirable working conditions and long hours each day to bring food and vegetables to our tables. It can be assured that we will not destroy the beauty of Industrial Boulevard. On the contrary, the name Cesar Chavez will make it more appealing. As an example, streets and avenues in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and in Austin, Texas, are very well kept and functional and have added to the economy of the cities, not taken away from them. Cesar Chavez Avenue will be a happy and colorful tribute and celebration and honor of the life and work of a giant of a man. We at the Cesar Chavez Task Force have actively spent time in the community up and down Industrial Boulevard, and to sort of complement or to pick up on the same thing that the City of Dallas is doing with regard to a survey as to the position of the residents on the renaming, I wish to make it known to you folks here that we have received a great number of support to rename Industrial to Cesar Chavez. Additionally, at 1120 South Industrial, a business establishment, an automobile mechanical shop, we yesterday erected a banner, a Cesar Chavez banner, indicating what we're hoping to accomplish in the renaming of Industrial to Cesar Chavez. In closing, I wish to again request that you honor the results of the City of Dallas survey and move forward to approve renaming Industrial Boulevard to Cesar Chavez. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Madam Secretary?
Our next speaker is going to be Latrita Cantley. Latrita Cantley. Final speaker this morning is Billy McLeod. Billy McLeod. Here he comes.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Council members. My name is Billy McLeod. I live at 1800 Lear Street in District 2 in Dallas. I'm here today to celebrate the grand opening and the beginning of a new day in prisoner reentry programs. I'm glad to say that Freedom Release Reentry Services, a pioneering reentry program underneath an alliance, a comprehensive alliance of other groups, began our first class in the Hutchins State Jail Unit yesterday. Freedom Release, as many of you have heard, and I want to first and foremost thank the Deputy Mayor Dwayne Caraway for meeting with our group, Deputy Mayor Elba Garcia for also meeting with us, and the mayor, is a pre-release program that is geared towards educating incarcerated individuals on how to matriculate back into society. As most of you know, the city has a Project Reconnect, which is a post-release reentry program. But what Freedom Release has done is developed a curriculum geared towards empowerment, or geared towards enlightenment, life skills, soft skills, and job training. So incarcerated individuals can find the hope they need prior to exiting back into the system of society. As most of you know, 600 individuals re-enter the streets of Dallas each month. Less than 10% of those people are ever touched by a program. 75% of them will go back into jail within 3 years, but 75% of those will go back into jail within 3 weeks. 3 weeks. And that is because there's a 6-week waiting period for a halfway house, and it's up to 8 weeks before they see a parole or probation officer. So what they are led to believe that they are on the streets with $50 and a bus ticket and no help whatsoever. In this country, 700,000 are released back into the streets every year. 75% of those are going back into jail within 3 years, but 75% of that is going back within 3 weeks. That's 500,000 people going back in the system. I'm here to thank the Dallas City Council for the support of a comprehensive reentry program that will be the finest in the country, that will be modeled after many studies. Congressman Gary Davis came down here, the sponsor of the Second Chance Act of 2007, and he looked at this program and said, this will be a model for the rest of the country. I'm looking forward to working within that comprehensive program. But I was here today to tell you thank you for listening to our program and to the needs of the ex-incarcerated population, because without the support of your voices, without you shining a light on the subject, nothing will get done. But yesterday, Freedom Release is proud to announce that we began our first class in the Hutchins Unit, and we have so much to do, so long to go, but I wanted to take the time to thank you for all your service, for listening to the needs of such a needy population, and social injustices are starting to end within the city of Dallas. Again, thank you all for all your hard work. As always, I'm proud of the service that you do for the city, and I wish you well. God bless.
Billy, we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I would also add to what Billy said, that we're working very closely, Elba and I and others on the council, with Charles Terrell, with Gary Griffith at Safer Dallas, and also I want to make sure that we recognize the work and the partnership with our DA, Craig Watkins, who's working very closely with us, too. I want to recognize that. Mr. Rosanti, did you have a comment, please?
Yes. Mayor, thank you. I want to take this time. I'm sorry Angela Hunt is not here in her position on Jenny, and I want to thank everyone who's taking a part in the program and trying to get Jenny moved from the city of Dallas. I really want to thank all of you. It's a sad situation. You know, I also want to thank Ms. Tomlin for taking her time off from her busy schedule to be here, and the compassion she has. I understand, Mayor, that you're meeting with Ms. Tomlin tomorrow. I would like for you to consider doing some soul searching. I think Dallas made a mistake, as I have said for the past 5 or 6 weeks. I think pictures tell 1,000 words. What we saw here, all of us have seen these pictures before. I've never seen it in a presented like this. I think it's time we stand up and say we've made an error, and we need to move her to the sanctuary where she might have, hopefully, 3, 4, or 5 years left in her life. I'm not a veterinarian. I'm not anyone who knows how to run a zoo. But the letters I have and emails I have received around the world from experts in this field are suggesting this. And I think we need to do something about it rather than making these people come back here week after week after week. It's a strain on them, and most important, it's a strain on Jenny. So, Mayor, I wish you do the right thing, in my opinion, and tell Ms. Tomlin tomorrow, look, I thought about this, I've talked to our city manager, I've talked to our park department head, and we're going to make this change. So I want to thank all of you for being here. And, Mayor, please give this some serious thought. Just not to have a meeting with her to placate her, but a meeting to tell her the right thing. And, again, thank all of you for coming down here. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. The minute, September 17th, and all both the council meeting and the special community meeting, and those of October 1st, 2008, those have been distributed. If I can have a motion for acceptance.
Move approval.
Mr. Newman moved it. Dr. Garcia seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, are your appointments to boards and commissions?
You have two full council appointments. You have the Reinvestment Sticks Board, Farmers Market. John Miller is being nominated by Councilmember Hunt, and Neil Sleeper is being nominated by Councilmember Hunt. Both meet qualifications there.
It's been moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, motion carries. Madam
Secretary. Those are all of the items for consideration.
Okay. Our first item of the agenda, Madam Manager.
The item that we'll be briefing you today on is one of your most critical move forward long-term issues, and so we'll keep you up to date. We've got some significant movement that will be coming up on your next council agenda. We hope you can be supportive of it. And additionally, there's information here, background, as you visit with the community about our water challenges and opportunities. We hope we'll share those with your constituents. And Ms. Puckett will do our presentation today.
Go ahead, Ms. Puckett. The floor is yours. I'm going to ask people in the audience to please quietly move out. We're ready to start business. Colleagues, we need you sitting down.
Good morning. I'm excited to be before you today to talk about some updates to our plan and to talk about the partnership that we've created with the Tarrant Regional Water District and an opportunity as well to look at Oklahoma Water as an option. To go to slide 3 on our briefing, again, we want to give you an update of where we are on that joint use project and as well as talk about Oklahoma. In your briefing packet, in the appendix, there's a number of slides that give you updates on other activities we're working on. I'm not going to go through those today, but we'll address questions if you have any. So go to page 5 of your briefing. Again, Dallas has been working with the Tarrant Regional District to evaluate a joint transmission project from Lake Palestine. For those that might recall, Lake Palestine is a lake we've had for over 30 years, and its timing to be added to our system for use is in the 2015 timeframe. Another part about our briefing today is that Tarrant Regional District and other North Texas providers have applied for water rights. We'll talk in Oklahoma. We'll talk about that in just a little bit, as well as the federal lawsuit that's ongoing right now that you've heard about regarding interstate commerce issues in Oklahoma regarding water. And then our interest in expanding our relationship with the district, we think that is in the best interest of the region as well as the city. Just to recap some of the things we worked on the last few, really since we last talked, on slide 6, if you look at some highlights of that, I want to mention our Lake Fork project. That pump station should be online in January. In fact, we're testing the pumps as we speak right now. That lake is located east of Lake Tewakene and is a big part of our future growth, and that lake will help meet demands from our east side plant, which is also under expansion. You've in the last few years approved a number of items related to the expansion of that plant. Another project that we're working on to highlight is our Lake Ray Hubbard permit amendment. Laker Hubbard is just east of Dallas. It's a workhorse lake, for lack of a better term, in our system. And we've applied for additional water in that lake, which is close in. If we achieve that increase, it will be allow us to delay some of our other projects, which we're excited about. If I go to slide six, just a couple other, to address a couple other highlights. Return flows are big issues related to our activities, reuse water. So that's another big part of that. We've actually applied for and received loan funding approval from the State Water Development Board to fund some of those projects. The next slide on slide eight is kind of our to-do list or our worksheet, for lack of a better term. You might recall having seen this before. We have about a 1,000 million gallons a day we have to be able to provide by 2060. And you can see along our path that we're still making good strides in that regard. But today I really want to talk about two things. The Lake Palestine Joint Study on slide 9 is an introduction to that. Slide 10 reminds us that back in September of 07, the council approved an interlocal cooperation contract with the Tarrant Regional Water District to look at cost sharing and pipelines, framework for increasing the reliability of our sources, both for us and for the district, and then look at some interim and emergency supplies as well. Specifically about the Lake Palestine Joint Transmission Study on page 11, this initial phase that we've been involved in that I want to report to you today was a fatal flaw business case analysis. In other words, we were just looking for, are there any reasons why we shouldn't partner with the district? We think it just intuitively it makes good sense, but from a standpoint, are there any fatal flaws that we're missing? And we looked at four major components, water quality, treatment, permitting, and the facility sidings. So the conclusion of that was by interconnecting our systems and jointly sharing in pipeline costs, because the district has a pipeline scheduled in the next 10 years to bring water in from the Richland Chamber, Cedar Creek area, that it makes good sense to do that. Additionally, we looked at bringing water to our Bachman plant, which is located near Harry Hines and Denton Drive, that will give us additional reliability that we don't have currently on the western side of our system. So those two things combined really have resulted in a pretty positive outlook to go forward. On page 12, I just want to show you some of the, this is a little busy, but in your briefing materials, it may show up better, that there's a number of different alternatives we looked at as part of this process. And where it looks like this next phase of the work that we'll be asking you to vote on the 22nd of October is to finalize the pipeline routes, to develop the terms and conditions of the cost-sharing agreements, the delivery efforts, the operational efforts, and so forth and so on. Because it's a fairly complex effort, but we think that there's a lot of opportunity to share, create reliability, and share costs. And as a result, reduce the cost of water to both the Dallas and Fort Worth customers. The next steps on the Palestine project on 13, again, that are included in the item that is scheduled for the 22nd, specific pipeline corridor and cost, the phasing, the framework for the relationship, financial, legal, operational, those types of things that have to get resolved in order to create this using partnership. And we'll be sharing roughly in this phase, the additional phase work, phase one work of on a 50-50 basis. And the number for some reason eludes me, but I think it's about $150,000. Dennis, do you? Something like that, $150,000 on the agenda item. The next big issue that I think is really a policy issue has to do with Oklahoma water. If you go to page 16, I mentioned the North Texas entities that have applied for water rights. Some activities have occurred as recently as in the last few months with the city of Irving. And we'll talk on that a little bit in a moment. But what I'd like to do now is introduce Jim Oliver, who's the general manager with the Tarrant Regional Water District. He's been the manager for over 20 years and has led that organization in providing water to the Fort Worth region. So, Jim?
Thanks, Jody. Thank you, Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Tarrant Region Water District, for those of you who are not familiar with us, we wrap around the west of Dallas. We cover a 10-county service area that starts around Decatur, Bridgeport, up that way, Wise County. We come down through sort of part of Denton, Parker, Tarrant counties, Johnson counties. We wrap around to the south and east and go down to Navarro and Freestone County. So we sort of wrap around Dallas Water Utilities from the east to the west. Is this cut sound, or am I supposed to talk?
Provide more than four times the water the state needs. While some counties in western Oklahoma are experiencing drought conditions,
here's a little video we made.
It's a lack of funding to build the infrastructure needed to get water to them. Now there's a proposal on the table that could provide some of that funding. The rapidly growing Fort Worth area would like to purchase surplus Gulf-bound water from the state of Oklahoma for a very fair price. This Gulf-bound water flows out of reservoirs in southern Oklahoma, such as Lake Hugo, into the Kainichi River and other water courses. From there it enters the Red River, mixing with its high salinity water and becoming less suitable for water supply. Ultimately, this water flows into the Gulf of Mexico, in effect, just going down the drain. But if Fort Worth's proposal is enacted, this wasted water will produce a revenue stream that could be used by Oklahoma for any purpose. Fort Worth isn't asking for much water. The most that could be taken would be less than 7% of the Gulf-bound water that flows into the Red River annually. And in times of drought, Oklahoma will always come first. Fort Worth will only get leftover Gulf-bound water. In fact, under this plan, Oklahoma reservoirs will lose absolutely no water. Lake activities, municipal water, and agricultural usage will be completely unaffected because all the water to be used is passing through the dams and on its way to the Red River. The water would be taken from the Kainichi River, Cache Creek, and Beaver Creek, as close to their confluences with the Red River as practical, only a matter of a few miles. Pumping stations similar to this one would be constructed on these waterways, along with pipelines that would carry the water to the Fort Worth area, all with no adverse environmental impact on Oklahoma's water system. And the benefits of the project can be realized without compromising in any way the present and future water needs of Oklahoma. You might even say Oklahoma's glass is so full it's overflowing, and Fort Worth wants to pay for the overflow. This is Gulf-bound water that is leaving Oklahoma never to return. But if Oklahomans decide to put this water to use, they will, in fact, get a great return on it in the form of new revenue that could be used for water supply infrastructure. Now, that's a refreshing idea, isn't it?
This is a video we made a couple of years ago, and it's very Fort Worth oriented, primarily because at the time we always intended to include Dallas in this process eventually, but we hadn't really got all those agreements in place yet. So we are looking at this as a Metroplex-wide effort. What situation is Oklahoma is we're looking at all these basins that are highlighted on the slide, and in in the 50s and 60s, state of Oklahoma, congressional delegation went to Congress and asked the Corps of Engineers to build a number of reservoirs, particularly on the eastern side of Oklahoma. Well, the Corps had to justify building those, and Oklahoma did not have the population to Congress, and Oklahoma did not have the population to support building those reservoirs. So the Oklahoma legislative delegation, congressional delegation, recruited the North Texas delegation from Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex to write letters, give testimony in support of building all these reservoirs. And in the congressional record, there's reams of testimony from the Oklahoma legislators saying this is going to be a partnership with North Texas. We're going to share that water with Dallas-Fort Worth, et cetera, et cetera. Well, apparently in the last 50 years, that partnership has sort of been forgotten, because there's been no effort. As we went up there and back in 2000 to start talking to them, and it was a multi-pronged effort. And when we really originally started in 2000, it was Dallas, Tarrant Regional, Upper Trinity, North Texas Municipal Water District, and Irving. We began negotiations with the Choctaws and Chickasaw Nations, which have the rights to a lot of this water on the east side, and the governor's office. And in 2002, the Oklahoma legislature passed a moratorium, an embargo against sales outside of the state of Oklahoma, sales of water. And the reasoning was they needed to do a water plan. They didn't really understand how much water they had, and so they were going to do a water study. Well, in 2004, they still had not started the water study, and they passed extended the moratorium another 5 years to 2009. So the moratorium is in effect right now until 2009. They have begun somewhat of a water study, but they're saying that they're not going to have it finished till 2012. So in 2007, with the study not beginning, we filed for permits, Tarrant Regional, and a lawsuit challenging the Oklahoma embargo against the transport and use of water out of the state of Oklahoma. Where it is now, the preliminary motions were decided in our favor in the Oklahoma Federal District Court in Oklahoma City, and the state of Oklahoma has appealed that to the 10th Circuit in Denver, and they are pending, the decision is pending. And basically what that involves is Oklahoma contended this is a state matter, it should be in state court, and we're contending no, it's an interstate matter, it needs to be in federal court. The judge ruled in our favor, they've appealed it, and we're hopeful for a positive decision on that. We are continuing to meet with the leadership in Oklahoma to discuss a sale. The lawsuit basically was intended to bring them to the table. And we have had some discussions, they're ongoing about a potential sale. The leadership of Oklahoma has basically expressed a desire after the last effort to work with one entity representing the Metroplex. And so that's why we're in the process. We're looking at, you know, we worked with Jody in the past, Dallas Water Utilities, and had a great working relationship of putting this MOU together. We've also got an MOU with North Texas Municipal Water District on the same, basically the same MOU. The City of Irving has filed, and City of Hugo has filed a federal lawsuit, and it's somewhat problematic for us. I think we'll be able to overcome it. We were somewhat surprised about their lawsuit and their attempt to get water because they really have no way to transport it or treat it or do anything with it. So, we're dealing with that, and we've assured the leadership in Oklahoma that we're not part of that. We are working with the Oklahoma legislative leaders in the administration, and the key is we're not asking them for stored water. We're asking them for excess water. And to give you a little idea of how much water is up there, Oklahoma has enough water right now in storage for 21 million people that's already in reservoirs that they've already got filled. They have a population of 3.4 million. So they've got a tremendous amount of excess water. There's 32 million acre feet of water leaving the state. So even if they build, if their population was to go to 21 million and they used all the reservoirs, they still got 32 million acre feet of water that's leaving the state every day. There's tremendous, primarily from the eastern, because there's a lot of rainfall there and there's not a lot of population, there's a lot of reservoirs. So what our, basically as that video showed, our plan is just to pick the water up right here, right before it goes in the red. As you know, once it hits the red, it becomes very saline because the red has a lot of salt springs up in this part of Oklahoma and in West Texas. So it's very salty. And our idea is just to pick the water up right before it hits the red, pump it under the red, and bring it into Texas. And everything we're doing is within the Interstate Compact. There's an Interstate Compact between Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Arkansas, and which allows Texas to take a certain amount of water from this basin. And this basin does include upstream of the Red River. So what we're doing is does not violate the Interstate Compact. And that's really gives you, in a nutshell, where we are on this project, and we really do appreciate we've had a long history of coordinating with Dallas Water Utilities. Now we get the chance to actually work on some viable projects, this in Palestine, and so we're looking forward to it. Thank you.
If you could go to the summary page, the next one at the upcoming council item, again, the joint project on the infrastructure of the Palestine pipeline effort, that's already on your agenda, and we would propose to put on the addendum an amendment to the interlocal contract to to basically partner with the district on the acquisition of Oklahoma Water. And in simple terms, we would be a partner. We would be a pro rata cost-sharing partner with Tarrant Regional as the lead, and we get to be participate with them, but they'll be the lead in the negotiations. The last thing I want to leave with you, Dennis, if you could go to like the, I call it the big picture map. It's not in your handout because it'd be so, it's the colors aren't that great. But what I want to try to show you is here's where we are in the middle of the Metroplex. And these pipelines indicate distances we have to travel to bring water into the region in the future. This red pipeline, that's our Lake Fork right there. And this pipeline is a fairly short distance compared to the other areas we'll have to travel. If Marvin Nichols were to be built, that water has to be dropped in here. If we go to Toledo Bend, it's off the sheet, so to speak. Even to get Palestine water in, which is right here, and Lake Fastrell, which is just south, we still have these 80 some odd miles to travel. So it's a packer lunch type drive. It's not the shorter distances that we're used to. And as Jim mentioned, bringing water in from Oklahoma, there's opportunities to drop water in to the water suppliers that serve this region. The major ones reminding you are Tarrant Regional, City of Dallas, and the North Texas Municipal Water District. And with that, Madam Manager and Mayor Leppard, I'll conclude our comments, and we'll certainly entertain any questions anyone may have.
Jody Sachs, Mary, did you want to add something?
I had two comments that I want you to think about as you go forward with this work that we're doing. Number one is, as a region, we are going to have to be fast partners with the other water providers in this region. That is important to our long-term success. It's also in the region and in the state. And number two is, for the future, we need to leave every option on the table. Situations change. Fastrell is a good example of that. So we need to be simultaneously pursuing and examining all the options. And what looks the most viable today may be denied in 2 years. And so it's just a long-range planning horizon on water that we need to leave all our options open and work toward these. We're excited about this possibility of the partnership with the other regional providers. We've been doing a lot of work with them. And this opportunity opening up the possibility for Oklahoma Water would really be a blessing for this region.
Terrific. Mr. Allen, then we'll go to Dr. Garcia.
Just very quick, very good presentation. And the one thing that you really take away, or at least I took away from it, is to see how that water is wasted in going into the Gulf of Mexico and not to take advantage of that. It was an excellent presentation. Looks like it's going to be a good partnership with our friends in Tarrant County. So, obviously, I support this.
Thank you, Mayor. And, of course, thank you, Ms. Puckett, for the briefing. The reason that Dallas has the amount of water that we have today is because leaders before us for the last 50 years have been planned to have this moving forward. Like the manager said, we never know what's going to happen. A lot of these pieces are still moving. The council had adopted a preliminary plan that we've been working for several years. It's expressed here, I am delighted that we are partnering with the Tarrant Water District. It's important. Now, I have one question, Ms. Puckett. In the briefing, it says that 80% of the 2060 water needs are reasonably assured. And I understand that in the past we have been told that for the next 20 years we are pretty much assured. I mean, can you tell me if Wright Patman and Fastrell are, which are not secure yet, are counted in the amount of water for the next 20 years or for the 2060 that you're mentioning on page 7?
They're a part of the beyond the 2035 time frame.
Okay.
And so we need to garner approximately 200 million gallons a day more in supply than we in essence have. And so they're not in the current amount, but they're in the 2060 amount. As you know, Fastrell, which I think we'll be briefing in executive session next week.
Correct.
Or today. Oh, today, I'm sorry.
Is it today, Mr. Perkins? Okay.
You know, that lawsuit's pending. And then the right time and water is tied up in the Region C, Region D study that the legislature put in place relative to the whole discussion about Marvin Nichols. So that's tied up in that basin. So that's why it's important for us to you know, keep all our cards on the table, so to speak.
I certainly agree with that. In the future City Council agenda items, and it's sad that a lot of our colleagues are not here. I hope all these items don't get full next Wednesday because they didn't know what was going on. Let me ask you, the exchange of Dallas return flows for Central and South Side, you know, all these are part of the water needs that are already on the table. Am I correct?
Correct. They're in these categories called likely and underway. So our reuse program under the likely category, mm-hmm. the trading of water with the North Texas Municipal Water District, and that item hopefully will come before Christmas, hopefully, as we get the details worked out on that, allows us to trade water and reduce infrastructure costs, and both entities get the supplies they need out of it.
Okay, perfect. Well, I just want to say, colleagues, it's time to stay the course. And it is important that we partner with the region to be sure that the water needs are assured. I am delighted to see also Ms. Pocket on page 33, the current Dallas water supply strategies. I think that is exactly what this council has been doing, is we have been putting the money where our mouth is, and I feel very confident that we are going in the right direction. And the communication with Tarrant County Water District is a great partnership, and I hope that the next legislative session will help us as well to define some of the very important issues that are still on the table, and that, you know, will guarantee the amount of water supply for the North Texas region. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr.
Dickey. Mr. Mayor, thank you. Joey? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Go ahead.
Jody, again, thank you for a very good presentation. Of course, I'm going to support this. And I've been here 7.5 years, and 7.5 years we have been talking about this. We have been on some issues like fast drill and things like this. It's something that's very, very important to the region. But I have just some questions. Dallas uses around 360 million gallons a day, something like that.
Our average is higher than that, probably.
410, is it around 410?
It ranges, depending on the weather, from about 420 to as much as 470 million gallons a day,
okay.
Just depending on the weather.
I have a couple of questions on page 8. And what we have here, what we have here is, and I've always been told that we have supposedly enough water to last us to around 2035, more or less.
More or less.
But, you know, we have to plan. I mean, we really need to get going on this. We just can't wait till the last minute on this. We have 376, we have 272, and we have, I'm going to continue the 191 because that's pretty likely. That's 839 million. And then we need, what I understand here, we need by 2060, we need a billion 40, we need the 1040. Is that correct?
For the total by 2060.
Yes. That means we're short about 200.
Correct.
And the 200 is the additional million gallons there. That's 200. And you hope to get that from unsecured, from right passing, and fast drill. You hope to get that from the unsecured on the right-hand side.
Our current recommended strategies included right patent and fast drill, but included for the long term, but included in the overall strategies the council adopted were alternatives for us to look at as well.
I know fast drill, you know, with a lawsuit, we're not really supposed to talk about it, and I stand, hopefully there might be a compromise on that. I don't know. But I guess my question on this is, we could be tying in with Oklahoma if the Tenth Circuit upholds the judge's findings. Is this what I'm understanding?
There will be an opportunity for us to negotiate through the Tarrant Regional District Water in Oklahoma if they prevail in the 10th district.
And if they,
10th circuit.
If they prevail, does Oklahoma have, I guess they can go further up the court ladder.
Sure.
And this could take years.
It could.
So we need to keep going no matter what Oklahoma
That's
says.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with it. Who does this benefit? I have two questions. I asked this question about 4 years ago, and I remember a rough figure. Do you have a rough figure on what this work could cost to produce this extra 200? Do you have any idea what this could cost?
Well, in terms of if I just use Lake Fassel as an example, that project, let's see, the lake costs were $400 or $500 million, if I remember correctly. Then you have the conveyance costs.
Yeah, but bringing it to, you know, tying
right.
it to our...
So the water supply costs, the numbers get into the billions pretty quickly.
That's right. I remember a figure that Ramon told us, and I could be absolutely wrong, was something like $3 or $4 billion.
Just as an example, the map I showed that shows the Palestine pipelines 80 miles into the city, the combined cost that we're looking at with the Tarrant Regional District for a total project is in the $1 billion range, and that's just to get water we own into the system.
Now, if this comes to fruition and everything is fine about this, will we be selling water to other communities?
As we do today, we will continue to sell water to other communities.
As we continue. And this is an interlocal agreement with the Tarrant County.
Our relationship with the Tarrant County.
And it's leading up to that we are putting this bill on a 50-50 basis.
We are footing the bill for the Palestine Joint Project on a 50-50 basis.
A question, if other communities are going to be participating and be advantageous to their community, is there any reason why they shouldn't be coming in with their pro rata share of paying for some of these studies? Or are you going to be tacking this on when we sell the water wholesale, this cost? And the problem I have with that is we got to wait a long time for that. And it might not happen, but it seems to me that if other communities are going to benefit with this, they should be stepping up forward and helping to participate in this study. That's how I'm looking at it. Do you have an answer for that?
I have a couple, Mary. Do you want, first of all, the joint study that we're doing on the pipeline project to get the conveyance of that water into our system. Those costs are passed directly on as O&M costs to the customers. Those are to all customers, both wholesale and retail.
You mean on a
today?
Okay. Yes. So those costs,
just like
that's
the
what
factual,
I wanted to hear. That's correct.
Okay.
So those costs that we're exploring this, those costs that we're paying, like this $150 or maybe another, who knows? In the next year, we could be spending another $600,000. It's money well spent because we need to do this. But those costs are going to be tacked on to our wholesale prices of people who we sell wholesale water to.
Mm-hmm.
Cross your heart?
Cross my heart.
I have no
hope
problem
to die.
With that. Okay?
Hope to not die soon.
I understand. I didn't want to add.
Well, Joe, what you're really using is utility accounting.
That's
as if we were standalone utility and we were returning costs either on a capital basis or an ongoing basis.
Yes, I've been asking this question, Mayor. I just wanted to make sure for a couple of years before you came here. I just wanted to make sure. But these costs are... Mr. Kenton, may I see you for a moment? Jody, I'm really happy to hear that. I really am. And this is a great job. Our water department has done that. Craig, good morning.
Good morning.
You've heard this conversation.
Yes, sir.
Have you, the costs that have occurred in this and added on, have y'all done an audit on this?
We have not done an audit on that. We did look into the possibility of doing that, but it's my understanding that there's work that has been done in other parts of the city administration on that. So we did not.
There's other works what?
And my understanding is that there are other studies that are currently being done to look at the water rates to make sure that all of those costs are being included. So we did not include that in our audit plan for 2009.
Okay. Jody, one last thing. you feel confident that these costs, you're prorating it properly as you sell wholesale water. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Based on the terms of the settlement agreement methodology that we have in place.
You mean the development agreement with the city?
With the city.
Does that development agreement call for us any time, like on an annual 6 months or every quarter, that as our costs increase, we can increase their cost, or is it when the contract expires?
That if, on an annual basis, we perform the cost studies that will result in rate changes.
You answered it. Very good. Very good. Very. That's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Mr. Tiffy, please. Mr. Mayor. Jody, I don't know which math it was. One was 12, and then the bigger, I don't know, go to 12 and see if maybe that can. Okay. My question is, and this is certainly something I'm in support of, we need to move forward on. I just want to ask a question. You've got your purple line and your green and then your gold, it looks like, line. The purple line comes from, what's that?
Let me give you a quick.
Yes,
these were different alternatives that we looked at in the study, and in fact, this was our baseline assumption of taking water on our own from Palestine to a new plant we'd have to build down here.
Right. Well, my question is, how are we going to? And I know that you're going to. We're not deciding today what we're going to do, but how if you don't have a connection from, let's say, the gold line or the green line to somewhere up in Dallas, how does the water get to us? Is there something I'm missing there?
Maybe just a little bit. Not,
like
let me
like
try
a short piece of pipe, maybe?
What? We're just getting, no buckets. If I had to predict where I think this project will end up, we will have a pump station at Palestine and pipeline that comes here and interconnects. So we could actually put water into Cedar Creek.
And
we could actually use Cedar Creek or Richland Chambers water instead of Powell.
Okay, how does the water get from
but
Cedar
let me,
Creek
Let me
to
keep
us.
Going. Right up here is Joe Pool Lake.
Okay.
Today, the Tarrant Regional Water District has two pipelines in this corridor already. And they have an outlet here where what we're looking at is bringing water from this point to our Bachman Lake. This is about 8 miles,
okay,
if I remember correctly, maybe 10. So what this allows us to do is take eastern water and turn it into what we call western water.
No, I follow that.
So there'll be a connection.
So why is there not a wavy line showing a connection from western water back to us as part
so
of
it? Why do I not have this shown?
Well, or something shown, because otherwise, how are we
going to
get the
water? They're not showing it.
She messed up. Okay.
I'm focusing on the route that we're considering.
Okay. Well, you didn't mess up, and you don't have to, take the dive yet, but I mean, I think just so that everybody understands, I mean, and I don't care particularly about this map, I just want to make sure that the goal is clearly including whatever connection is necessary for Dallas Water Utilities to get the western water as it either passes by us or comes back to us, or because without that connection, I don't want to sound negative, why do the
without that connection, it doesn't.
That's right.
That path doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so I think you need an orange line or a red line or something.
That's an excellent point, because I think that you'll be seeing a version of this map in the future as we update you on the progress.
And the reason I'm bringing it up, Jody, is that we sometimes take things in chunks, and I think that that's a key part of making this work for both Tarrant and Dallas Water Utilities.
Absolutely.
And so I would rather see it all up front. Yeah, the dollars will be bigger, but rather than getting the eastern water to the west and then coming back either at this council or some future council and say, now we need another $1 zillion to make our connection to it, I think we ought to look at it as one project.
And just because I'm using my crystal ball looking forward, this project about bringing water to Bachman, we could do that sooner. If I go this my own way, I have to build a water treatment plant to use that water.
Okay.
By doing this, I could. I don't have to do that, and that saves me, gosh, at least in today's dollars, $300 million.
Okay.
And we think we have enough capacity to do that.
All right. Fully in support of it.
Good point.
Thank you.
Terrific. Jody, thank you very much. I'd make one comment and just some miscellaneous questions. I think that the most important comment was the one made by Dr. Garcia when she gave a historical perspective that
as good a shape as we're in now if we hadn't had people back decades ago that were willing to make some pretty significant decisions, and those were probably very difficult decisions, to be truthful with you. We would not be in the position that we're in. Back in the 50s, we had the drought situation. We very well could be in a position, if people didn't step up at that time, to some of the terrific things that we're seeing happen in this market, the growth we've seen. That would be at best a fantasy. And so again, I think, Dr. Garcia, that was the relevant comment of everything. The Oklahoma is the intriguing one for a number of different reasons. As Mary pointed out, you've also got uphill versus downhill that comes into place on the operating costs and the pumping and those sorts of things. My question is, in that video that we saw, they made a comment. I know it was made largely oriented at the consumers in Oklahoma, but it was that if there was drought situations, Oklahoma would clearly get first preference. Does that raise any issues, again, to the extent that we're tied in on a regional basis from a weather standpoint? May very well have a drought in Oklahoma that would also be a drought in Texas. That would be the time we would need water. That would have the highest demand. If all of a sudden, at the peak point or at the critical point, we didn't have it, is there any issue in that we should be concerned with?
Well, I think the way we deal with those issues, and Jim may want to weigh in as well, is we develop an operational guideline that takes all that into account. And one of the things, just as a more recent example, in the drought, the little drought we had, where the North Texas Municipal Water District was in a severe situation, where both Dallas and Tarrant Regional were not, because of the way their systems were built. And so I think as we're able to interconnect and regionalize those to some degree, it really does start to dampen that. And Jim, you want to add anything to that? As far as Oklahoma?
Yeah. One point, Mayor, that picture, the depiction that you saw with the water spilling over the Udo Reservoir,
right,
that was taken in July of 2006 in the height of the drought. They had a drought there. We had a drought here. There's still so much water flowing on the east side of Oklahoma that it would take a drought that we've never seen.
Where is the source of that water?
Whether there's springs and rainfall, they get about 50 some odd inches of rain in that area, so they get a lot more rain, probably about 20 inches more than we do here. So in the eastern side of Oklahoma, yeah. That water is going to be very dependable over there. And we'll be negotiating with them about trying to firm that up a little bit more as things go on. But that's very dependable water. Now, the western water...
And I guess Mary also pointed out that the lakes that we have, the sources that we've got now, we've got first priority on those. So
right.
Although we may be selling to somebody else.
We basically will take... When there's water up there, particularly, we will be filling our lakes up with that water. So we'll have it stored down here. If there is a severe drought, we'll be ahead of the game because we'll have water already down here.
And that bridges the second part of my question, and that is the entity itself will be buying the water. What kind of terms, conditions are there going to be in terms of the proportionality, to the extent that Dallas receives so much, Tarrant receives so much, as that goes up and down? Is that just to be negotiated?
Yeah, we just have to figure that part out. One of the things that Jim and I have talked about, this Western Water, they have a lake, it's Lake Bridgeport, right?
Right.
Is that your furthest north?
Right.
So we may be looking at different operational scenarios in the future where we don't have off-channel storage for flashy water, which is, you know, kind of flood water, where we're able to save that water and have that inflow into our lakes over time. So, you know, some of the ways we've been doing things are going to change as it relates to how those sources are becoming reliable.
Okay.
So that's yet to be determined. And so.
Fair enough. Understand. Okay. Well, we appreciate the time both of you spent. Clearly, as we said, it's a big issue. It's one that we've got to get right, and the sort of decisions we're going to make today, those are 20- and 30-year decisions. At a minimum, more realistically, half a century. So we appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is a briefing that has to do with a number of bids that are outstanding, and those bids are related to attracting important national events to this community, not only to the city, but to the region. The briefing is based on two of proposals that are out. One is both to the NCAA, one to the Women's Final Four, and the other to the Men's Final Four. What our purpose really is here is a background briefing leading to an item where we would be able to authorize application to the state for funds that would be important in garnering these two events. Both events, one of them, I know the group has been in. I think that meeting went very well, and hopefully in both of these cases, in the not-too-distant future, we'll know. And my sense is, and Frank, I'll turn it over to you, but from my conversations, we should feel optimistic at least.
Thank you, Mayor. As the Mayor stated, our discussion today is really in regards to two separate two separate committees that have organized to submit bids for the men's and women's Final Four. What we want to do today is to review with you some information regarding what's called another events trust fund that we'll go into some level of detail a little bit later on in the presentation, and how that is structured in a way to support municipalities and counties that seek to go after these types of major events. Moving on to slide three, as the Mayor indicated, we're here with three basic goals. One is to secure the City of Dallas's support for qualified special events under that legislation, which we'll go over briefly during this presentation, to become an endorsing municipality for purposes of supporting these events. And finally, to ensure that the city fully recovers its incremental expenses in support of these qualified special events. By way of background, this is not the first time that the city has been into this arena. Back in 2007, when the region was pursuing the 2011 Super Bowl, the city council, through resolutions, authorized itself to be an endorsing municipality, as well as discussing various governmental assurances that might be a part of that bid, which ultimately resulted in a very successful bid in this region securing the 2011 Super Bowl. Why participate in these events? So there's really four basic reasons. The first one, obviously, is the economic impact that these types of events generate. If you consider the Super Bowl, the NFL estimates that that event will bring approximately $400 million in economic impact to this region. The 2008 Men's Final Four in San Antonio is estimated to have generated $47 million in direct economic impact to that city. And the Women's Final Four in 2008, which was in Tampa, was just slightly under $20 million in economic impact to that area. Further, the sanctioning organizations and committees that support these types of events do a lot of things within the community. And as, again, using the NFL as an example, they have a lot of sponsored community events, outreach programs, with a particular emphasis on engaging minority and women-owned businesses as part of that process. Thirdly, and one that I think we can't lose sight of, is the global recognition and media exposure that these events bring to the community, which obviously allows us to showcase the investments that this council and others have made in the infrastructure within our community, as well as build on the image of Dallas as a tourism destination. We benefit, obviously, because the majority of the hotel rooms that can be a part of these packages are in the city limits of Dallas. And then further with that, our diversity of cultural entertainment and restaurant venues will be a draw for those out-of-town guests when they come into the competition. Our current opportunities, as the Mayor noted, really deal with two events for the bid period of 2012-16, where we have the opportunity working with these two committees to secure one of the competitions, the Women's Final Four during that period, as well as the Men's Final Four during that same time period. For the Women's Final Four, all the events are being proposed within the city of Dallas, with the American Airlines Center serving as its primary game site. For the Men's Final Four, the game is being proposed for the new Cowboys Stadium. However, as listed in your presentation, a number of major events are being proposed to be within the city of Dallas. Both of those decisions for those two events will come in mid-November of this year. Finally, there is some consideration that is currently underway to pursue the NBA All-Star Game, which, if that bid advances, will be coming back to the council, obviously in some form, to see your pleasure relative to engaging the Other Events Trust Fund. What is this Other Events Trust Fund? in its simplest form, it's really a mechanism developed by our state legislature that allows endorsing cities and counties to access the incremental state sales and use taxes, hotel taxes, and mixed beverage taxes that are attributable to those qualifying events, and we'll have a listing of those here shortly. That allows the, through those incremental taxes, it allows obviously the local organizing committee to support those events that are brought in to the city and to pay for those services that might be called upon within the city that they're hosting those activities in. Within the statute, an endorsing municipality or county may restrict taxes that they deem and determine as necessary to meet their obligation. And as an example, with the Super Bowl and again with these two events, the City of Dallas, through bond covenants and contractual obligations, has restricted the hotel occupancy tax or mixed beverage tax that would not be applicable to those two activities. To request the establishment of the Other Events Trust Fund, or the OTF, a site within the state must be selected by a site selection organization, and we'll these are the site selection organizations that are identified on this slide, the National Football League, NCAA, NBA, and others. These events are the engagement of that trust fund comes with an application from the local organizing committee or the municipality or county. What are the events that this state statute supports through the Other Events Trust Fund? And you'll see a listing on page 9 of those events that are contained within the legislation that are considered qualified events for the purposes of the OETF. When you consider how it works, and the next few slides really deal with sort of the mechanics of the process for engaging the Other Events Trust Fund, it's really based upon a proposal that's submitted by the LOC, with the controller, which the controller will receive and determine the geographic boundaries for the market area in which the qualifying game or related events will occur, and in which there is a reasonable likelihood of an economic impact directly attributable to the preparation for and the presentation of the game and its related events. Further, upon request of the endorsing municipality or endorsing county, the controller shall provide between 3 to 6 months in advance of the game an estimate of what those incremental increases in certain tax revenues would look like for 2 weeks prior to the game and then up to 1 day after the game. And then this estimate really serves as the basis for determining the amounts of funds that would be deposited into the OETF. This program actually functions outside the state's treasury and is in trust by the controller, and the funds can be dispersed by the controller without appropriation from the legislature. The use of these funds require each endorsing municipality or county to enter into what's called an event support contract with the LOC, which actually authorizes disbursements from that fund. The controller deposits those funds into the OETF on a basis of what are the state incremental tax revenues that would be in an amount equivalent to the lesser of the state portion of the estimate, or 6.25 times the amount of the city and county tax increment contributed to the fund. All that is trying to be distilled, if you will, into a little example we put for you on slide 12. The salient point of this is that the estimates are based on an economic impact study that is done by the LOC, that the endorsing municipality deposits their portion into the controller's estimate, with the controller estimate in the trust fund, less any amount needed to meet its obligation. So in reality, what this example shows is that for every dollar of increment that the city is willing to contribute to the fund, leverages $6.25 from the state. So purposes of just identifying how that might work, if the city of Dallas were to be an endorsing municipality and determine that its incremental taxes for that special event were $150,000, and determined that it only wanted to deposit $50,000 of that increment into the trust fund or have it withheld for the to the trust fund. Then 6.25 times that amount, or $312,000, would be what the controller would deposit out of the state increment of taxes, therefore yielding a budget of $362,500. So that's mechanically how that process works. In addition to the OETF, and certainly with the NCAA and what we experienced with the NFL, we fully anticipate that the local organizing committees will come forward with certain governmental assurances, some of which we may be able to do and want to do, others we may be prohibited from doing for a variety of reasons. But the next few slides are really to depict some of the types of governmental assurances that might be that the city may be called upon to participate in. Aside from certainly a request that all governmental services to the event organizer might be a request that they would make to have all those provided at no charge to these the sanctioning body. Others involve such things as ambush marketing, where you would have clean zones around event sites where competitive brands or sponsors would be prohibited from going, to provide certainly public safety, emergency personnel, medical services, etc., to look at information booths at area airports to provide information to the guests that would come in, vehicle licensing, if there were any special fees engaged, that they might be requested to waive those fees for official vehicles, temporary flight restrictions over area airports may be another request that we might be called upon to participate in. Transportation and rates and locking in rates at certain time periods in advance of the game so that it deals with the opportunity for someone to get into price gouging, if you will, for the events. Venue reservation agreements, whereby each venue that might be a part or used for the game or a related event would agree to a certain reservation periods for the activities that would be held in conjunction with the game. In other words, try to hold spaces so that you don't allow other competitive events to come in and ride on, if you will, the NCAA activities. That the venues themselves would look to restrict and not allow the opportunity for competitive activities to come in and take advantage of the games or related events. And certainly the venues can petition the LOC or the sponsoring organization to get releases from dates at certain time periods. So those would be examples of types of conditions that may be, might be called upon in the process of supporting these events. What are we asking for you to consider in our recommendations? There's really two parts. First is the City Council approval on its October 22nd agenda of a resolution that would support the NCAA men's and women's Final Four bid, and with respect to those two events, that the city would be an endorsing municipality under the qualifications to sort of set the stage, if you will, for the engagement of the other events trust fund, and that the city of Dallas would be open to contribution of its incremental sales tax revenues to the OTF for those two events, the NCAA men's and women's Final Four. Secondly, we would seek authorization for the city manager to work closely with the NCAA men and women's Final Four local organizing committees as a citywide and as a regional event, which actually qualify under the state statute and what's cited in the presentation. And again, in that context, the City of Dallas would participate as an endorsing municipality under the OETF. Further, that the city would be open to contribution of its incremental sales tax revenue to that OETF. Thirdly, that the City of Dallas's requirement to enter into an event support contract with the LOC, which would provide the City of Dallas a priority position for reimbursement of its incremental expenses from the OETF for support of those events. And then finally, to the extent that the OETF funds do not reimburse the city for those incremental expenses, that it will be reimbursed through the local organizing committee. That concludes the presentation and recommendations for your consideration.
Yeah. Well, why don't you leave that last page? I don't think that was in our materials yet.
for whatever reason. We had 17, and then we jumped to 20 for whatever reason. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mr. Newman, you want to start?
Yeah, I absorbed 18 and 19, given that we only got 17. Mayor, thank you very much, Mr. Poe. This is a great opportunity for Dallas. Wow, what a great opportunity. I'm glad we're considering this. I hope the council will approve it. This goes to our competitiveness, and so I'm very pleased with the question, Frank. It mentions in here, I think it's on page 11 is where I was stuck. It was talking about the estimate of the revenue in the sales tax. The controller makes this estimate?
Yes, based upon an economic impact study that is delivered, an economic impact study from the local organizing committee
okay.
is provided to the controller. The controller takes that in consideration at this, as it determines and makes its decision relative to the estimate of the incremental taxes.
Okay, and it's it redirects both the state's portion of sales tax and the city's portion.
That
what
is correct.
What about the DART portion, the 1%? Does that get factored in or not?
No, it would not.
So just the ART, which is 5.25? The city's 1, the state's 5.25? It's a 6.25, but not DARTs. Okay.
That is correct.
All right. Okay. No, I'm very supportive, Mayor. I think this is a very good, positive step forward, and I appreciate our staff and your leadership on this, and again, bringing these type of national venues to Dallas. Very positive thing for Dallas. Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Kelly?
Thank you, Mayor. And, Frank, let me just ask, we've made these bids, and I guess I want to know who's on the committee, or who's receiving, and who's the team?
We have actually some of the representatives here today for the men's and the women's Final Four, but let me just highlight for the men's Final Four. They have representation, three individuals I can call by name right now, Charlotte Jones Anderson, Dan Beebe, and Rick Baker currently, but they also have a number of organizational representatives through the Dallas Cowboys, five area chambers that are participating in the event. And it may be I could ask Dan to come up and speak to Sam Petty to speak to just the men's Final Four in terms of the overall representation. For the women's Final Four, Laura Estrada is part of the board currently, Drew Hancock, as well as Dave Brown with the Center Operating Company for the women's Final Four presently. Now, they're expanding and adding in individuals to those committees as they approach the bid day.
And if those are awarded, then that will be expanded even more in terms of a host committee, much like it's been the case with the Super Bowl.
Well, what happened with the Dallas-Fort Worth Regional Sports Commission?
I don't know that I can adequately answer that. The Dallas-Fort Worth Sports Commission is not something that I could address for you.
Okay.
Well, I could get an answer for you, but I don't have that.
One existed. I was on it. So, okay, well, somebody give me some
well,
that. Okay, and one thing I'd like to say and suggest that we do formulate a sport. I think, Mayor, we need to have a sports authority of some nature. We can talk about that.
No question.
And one that's inclusion of everyone, okay? And because they're where I support and will be supporting, I'm just thrilled, peacock proud that we're going to go after the you know, NCAA and all of those events, but then there are still other events. And I don't want us to just globally focus on just the big event. If you know, we had Texas OU this past weekend. We have another football game that's in town this weekend that none of us really even know about. And it's still Dallas. If it's a big event, it's a big event. If it's a little event, it's a little event. But the event is happening in our city. And I'm one that would make sure and would want to make sure that we step up to the plate and be excited about everything.
Why don't you mention that event?
Well, who is Texas? Who is it, Frank?
Y'all know Texas A&M Commerce.
Yeah, big football game.
Pine Bluff, Tennessee, I believe.
No, not that one.
Pine Bluff.
Pine Bluff. That's in November.
I thought Texas A&M Commerce.
And that proves the fact of what I'm trying to say now. We have an event at the Cotton Bowl, and I want us to be excited about all events, big, little, small, whatever. And we should, you know, formulate some type of authority so when we're doing anything, that we step up to the plate with everything and all we got when it comes down to the city of Dallas. There are other basketball tournaments and opportunities that we should be seeking out, and not just one or two. One was the Southwestern Athletic Conference. That's Grambling and all of those folks. They have a basketball tournament that has been in this city before, and that may not go to reunion. Well, not won't anything go to reunion. That won't go to American Airlines, but it certainly could go across the street to the convention center. And I think, Mayor, an authority with a targeted focus on these types of situations would benefit us down the line, okay? So that we can look at all events, all opportunities for all folks. Right now, we should have somebody working on soccer. We should have somebody working on basketball on all levels, and to use all of our facilities, because we have the facilities, but we're not focused in on them. I would like to get a list. I'm going to close. I want to get a list of the folks that's making the decisions. I want to see the team of who has been a part of making these decisions, have been negotiating and talking on our behalf, and I totally support it, but I do want us to kind of branch out a little bit. I want to get a report on the Dallas-Fort Worth Regional Sports Commission. I want to know what happened, where they are. Terry, you know what I'm talking about. You was there with us. I want to know about that and why they're not involved or whatever happened to that. And Mayor, let's try to move toward a sports talk. Appreciate it.
Any other comments? Mr. Tinsky.
Just very briefly, Mayor, this is certainly, you know, something we need to do, and we need to, as Mr. Caraway is talking about, we need to get our feelers out into the rest of the other sporting events and things and see if we can drag, you know, more and more of them here. It'll bring a lot of economic benefit to the city of Dallas, and certainly we'll support it.
Terrific. Frank, appreciate it very much. Again, I think on these two, the regional cooperation is so important, so we want to make sure that we thank other cities such as Fort Worth, Arlington. Those will be participating with us on some of these bids. And I tell you, having gotten to meet with some of the committees on these as they come in to do the site evaluations, I tell you that you're generating great cooperation in the community from a lot of different parts of the community. That's absolutely critical if we're going to be successful on these. So let's hope that we are on the very, very short list.
Mayor,
Mr. Zaffi, please.
Mayor, thank you, Frank.
Yes,
very nice presentation. It's great if we get the Final Four. This is North Texas region between 12 and 16, between
yes.
2012 and 16, if they were going
that's
to be
correct.
In the Final Four, hopefully. Question on the incremental, is this something, Mr. Newman asked this, I do not understand a team willing to come down here without a guarantee rather than saying, you know, we will give you our incremental. Are they willing to accept from the state what our incremental might be, or will they want a guarantee you haven't gotten there yet?
The guarantee of the ultimate arrangements will be between the LOC, the local organizing
between committee. What? I'm so sorry.
The local organizing committee and that sanctioning body.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Our relationship by the city will be between ourselves and the local organizing committee through an event contract.
Okay, between that group one, the group one then will be like a diagram in English. They will, the various things. So our participation in this would be to the top of the umbrella group, and we will give them the incremental tax, and that will be figured by who? That's what
the state comptroller will make that estimate. The city will determine
okay.
what it wishes to contribute to
yes.
that.
we've participated in some things like that in the past, and we hope the state does it properly. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Very good job on this. I think it's great if we can get this. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it. The next item on the agenda, and we won't do any type of a presentation. I'll just open it up if there's questions or comments, is the calendar. All of us have seen that. Kind of went through it. It's been distributed. Any questions or comments on that?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor.
Zancy, you're up.
I have a question on page... Where did I get my yellow marker? I have a question on June.
So June of the calendar.
June of 09. Excuse me. You know, Mayor, we have on here June 22nd as the inauguration. My question is, in the past, we have discussed this. A couple of council members have discussed this. And... to have it at Meyerson is around $30,000 to $35,000. That's what the cost has been in the past. And my question is, why don't we consider having it right here at City Hall, where we can maybe save $25,000 to $30,000? I think it's something we should be looking at.
And that's a fair point. It'll be decided by the council. This is only setting the date, so regardless of where it is today.
I understand, but I want to get an early memo in there that we should be looking to have that at the city rather than spending $30,000 to $35,000 on this stuff.
Very free to do that.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay. Dr. Sue?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. If I review it correctly, it pretty much stays the same calendar as we did last year. The only changes are, you know, the inauguration. Am I correct?
Just right, exactly the same.
Everything else stays the same. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mayor. And I look forward to the conversation about the inaugural. Of course, it has been done at City Hall before, and I think, Mayor, the problem that if I remember correctly, was the amount of space, Mr. Rosensky, that we have over here, since we have 14 council members and a mayor. So, thank you. I will be supporting the city calendar.
Terrific. Anything else? Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Let's keep on going. We've got another 40 minutes before lunch. We're going to an executive session. If I could, let's just jump to the briefing on the audit. Mary, you should turn that to you. Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The briefing behind tab D is it's a very short briefing with a couple of attachments.
I'm sorry, Ms. McGon, did you have a question? Okay.
Starts with some background on page 2. The city has three separate pension plans. One is the Employees Retirement Fund, and that is civilians belong to that. There is a Police and Fire Pension System Fund, and that's all uniform members, police and fire. And there's also a Police and Fire System Supplemental Plan. And I think I've got it right if I say that is for employees of police and fire that are above the rank, above the highest civil service rank, and it covers their pay and benefits above that level. Additional background, a snapshot of what the funds looked like on December 31st. The active members in the various funds, how many retirees and beneficiaries they have. Other terminated is going to be folks that had participated in the plan, became vested, and for some reason left the city but are not right now drawing benefits. They're probably waiting to reach a particular age and start drawing the benefits at that point. The actuarial assets, for instance, on the ERF fund, nearly $3.2 billion on page 3, and the liabilities of that fund at that point were $2.9 billion. So that fund is obviously in a very healthy position at that December 31st time frame, 109.2% funded. The funding ratio, if your assets are equal to your liabilities, that's 100%. Funding ratio. The Police and Fire Pension Fund is lower than that at 89.4%, and the supplemental fund is 83.9%. I think it's important to note that in the police and fire fund, the actuarial calculations, and it's really not part of this audit, but I will note that the level of the contributions that are being put in right now by the city and the employees of the police and fire pension fund say that with all the actuarial assumptions, that fund is gaining progress toward 100% funding, and I think the time frame is a 14 to 15 year time frame. So it's from the pension standpoint, I think it's fairly healthy, obviously not in the position that the ERF fund is in. So why are we here today? This is a new presentation from staff, from management to the council. The council hasn't seen this type of presentation before, and it follows a new state law that went in the last legislative session that stated a requirement that all public pension funds with assets in excess of $100 million have to have an actuarial audit performed at least every 5 years. And it's the governing body is charged with that responsibility. And I think that's to keep it separate from the pension fund boards, and because they have the direct oversight. The council has the higher level oversight, if you will. And it's to give, I think, an independent report, to make it clear that it's an independent actuarial audit. This is not a financial audit, but it's an actuarial audit. The note on page 4, to differentiate, it's not, and these are actuarial terms, it's not a full replication of the actuarial valuation. Each of the funds have their own actuarial firms, and they do actuarial reports every single year. And they can get pretty in-depth to look at all their assumptions and history and the occurrences and in a sense try to predict the future. This audit that was done now was not a full replication of that. That would have been, it's not required, and that would have been tremendously more expensive as well. But this audit was to evaluate the reasonableness and appropriateness of the methods and assumptions, certifications and conclusions of each of the fund's actuaries. You hear us talk about generally accepted accounting principles when we talk about our financial audits. The city's outside auditor for financial purposes is Grant Thornton, and they review what we do in our financial statements to make sure they follow generally accepted accounting principles, GAAP accounting. The actuarial audit has its own set of standards, their actuarial standards and practices, and that sets the guidelines that the actuarial firm, in this case, we hired Deloitte to do the audit. And I do have a representative from Deloitte here. Ms. Jeannie Chen is in the audience, and she was active on this engagement all the way through. So the audit process included test cases from GRS, and that stands for Gabriel Roeder Smith. That's the actuarial auditor, that's the actuary for the employee retirement fund, and Buck is the actuarial firm for the police and fire pension system. So that we reviewed all of those two firms' assumptions and reports and valuations of the systems to be sure that they were appropriate, kind of a second level review. Deloitte did have some recommendations that they've shared with the two boards and are in their report that is attached here. I think I'd be fair in categorizing these findings as somewhat minor, and I've got some, their own words are attached in the report, so I'll leave you to conclude that. But the first one is highlighted, consider using a different mortality table. And both of the actuary firms have responded with, I'll kind of paraphrase their response. While there may be nothing wrong with the RP2000 mortality tables, each of the actuaries uses something more specific that more closely follows the history that each of the plans has been incurring, and they feel more comfortable that that's a better way to proceed, but they will consider in the future. And then the recommendation to continue to monitor the actual emerging experiences of the plan, and yes, both actuaries and the boards agree with that. The additional recommendations regard the actual reports, the actuary reports that come from each of the boards each year. The two pension funds and systems have their actuarial reports posted on their website. They're available for everybody to see. And these recommendations regard enhancements to those reports, informational additions, perhaps. The first one regards the GASB 27. That's the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. And the response from the actuaries was that the GASB 27 doesn't exactly relate directly to the pension funds, but it's more a requirement of the city's financial reports, and we do comply with that. Another one, the disclosure of expected future benefits payments. The ERF actuary recommended to their board that they can consider in the future including an overall cash flow, not just an estimate of future benefit payments, but a cash flow of the money coming in and the money coming out to give a more balanced view. And the police and fire pension actuary, Buck, indicates that they do provide that information to the board, but it's not included in their actuarial report. It's presented to them outside of the report. Recommended a line item that identifies plan and assumption changes since the past year. In the ERF plan, they didn't have such a listing and identification because there were none. There have been no benefit changes in the ERF plan since the early 90s, and there were no recent changes in their assumptions. However, the actuary will consider including a statement to make that clear to everybody that it's not just omitted from the report, but that there were no changes. Disclosing the target asset allocation for each of the funds is recommended to be included in the actuarial report. Both of the actuaries report that that information is included in the fund's annual reports, but it's not in their actuarial reports. And that they recommend in the police and fire system that they break down the source and the amount of liability gains or losses that differ from the assumptions. And the Buck consultants concluded that that would be a reasonable addition to the plan. I think they plan to do that going forward. In summary, what we've done is compliant with the government code, the new law from 2007. This is part of the process. It's required to be presented to the governing body at an open meeting of the public. The attachments that you'll see are required as well, the actuarial audit itself, as well as the responses from each of the funds. Deloitte met with the administrators of the funds and with the boards of the funds to go through their findings and recommendations as we went along this process. So the conclusions there on page 8 is that the actuarial valuations are reasonable and appropriate. Everything that they found was within industry standards. The reports do present a fair representation of the liabilities and no issues of serious concern. And the responses from the firm, from the consult, the actuarial firms indicate they will consider and include recommendations as they move forward. And because this is required every 5 years, our next review would be scheduled for 2013, and it would review the 5 years that end December 31st, 2012. The attachments, as I said, are the actual report from Deloitte Consulting and the responses from the actuarial firms that the board, that the funds use. And with that, I'll conclude and try to entertain questions.
Thank you, Mr. Craig. Why don't we start with questions? Mr. Rudansky?
Dave, good morning.
Good morning.
Dave, let me ask you a couple questions. I want to go to page, I want to go to page 24. And, of course, this is always subject to very cyclical moves in our markets. And I guess the retirement fund and I've I served on the Dallas Police and Fire Prevention, Pension for about 5 weeks. And then I got legal aid resignation to resign from that. Is this the same way where they put certain percentages in different investments and things like that?
Well, each of the boards has their own investment advisors,
yes.
And they make investment decisions.
The bond that we floated to meet state standards, minimum state standards, was that for the employees' retirement fund?
We issue general obligation bonds as part of the complex solution, if you will, to the employee retirement fund. Yes,
3 years ago. More
I want to say early in 2002.
Because we're looking at the state to bring up to the level we're 500 million short.
Oh, I'm being corrected that it was, we issued the bonds early in 2004. I'm sorry.
Okay, I said around 3 years ago.
A few years ago.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
We're about $500 million short. There was two of us on a city council who did support using this money and going back to the market to try. I guess my question is, on page 24,
yes, sir,
because Deloitte Touche, the 964 is not net. That's
net.
The return. That is not net, is it?
Net of what? I'm sorry.
Of cost. Because on page 34,
Well, these are investment returns.
I understand, but it's a little. That's not the net to the pension plan.
No, it's not trying
because
to imply.
Very clear.
It's not trying to imply that their assets grew by 9%.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to get sidelined. It says, considering on page 34, number 2, specific comments, consider including annual pension costs and net pension obligations and actuarial valuation because. We had to float a bond issue and paying around 5.25% to make that up. And if I remember right, we had to earn, at the time you presented to City Council, if I remember right, we had to earn around 8.5% to 9% just to make up for the cost of that.
No, sir. No, I don't. Yeah, I wouldn't portray it that way at all. We issued the bonds. There were 30-year bonds at roughly an overall cost of, I believe it was 5.21%. So
yeah,
you're right
five
there.
Or 5.5%.
Yes, sir. At the time, the actuarial assumption was that the fund would earn on a go-forward basis 8.25% each year.
Well, I said around 8.5.
Well, it's not that we had to. Well, you said you had to earn that level to break even.
Well,
I would say that we had to earn 5.21 to break even.
We have to earn 8.5% to keep up with the deal, and it's costing us 5.5. My question is, do they do a mark to market on their investments?
I know the answer from the employee retirement fund is yes, because they were in front of the Finance Committee just a few weeks ago, or maybe several weeks ago, and they answered, yes, we do that daily, is what
on their market said. Well, you can't do it daily on their real estate investments.
I think they either didn't have any, or she may have exempted that out, but I'm not sure they have any.
Police and fire did have at one time when I was on.
I believe they do.
They still do.
Yes, sir.
Do they price
real estate assets?
Do they price those on a mark-to-market?
Well, as you know, that'd be much more difficult to do, and I'm not able to tell you how they value their assets in their actuarial report, but I assume they make a best estimate of market value at that point in time.
On a quarterly, semi-annual basis or what?
Well, I'm sorry, I can't answer. I know they'll do it in their annual report.
I'll bet they do not do real estate on a quarterly mark-to-market.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, that'd be real.
And when you said daily, I knew, and I concur with the mayor. They might not do it, and they might not do it. Period. I agree with you. They might not do it, but this is something you need to. We ought to just look at for the benefit of the police and fire. We need to take a look at it on a mark to market because the reason I resigned when I found out that I'm personally liable. Being on their pension board, myself resigned and another council member resigned.
So I just like you to just take a look at it.
I'll ask them.
Because this is a big thing. If they don't do it on a mark-to-market and they think the assets are worth X and these things have changed. I appreciate it's something that all pension plans in the United States have been hit. You know, there's anybody from General Motors down that hasn't taken a hit in their pension plans, and we've got to do the best we can. I know we had to float a bond issue at one time. I think this pension plan was something like $800 or $900 million in the hole, so a whole lot. So I appreciate it. It was good reading material over the weekend. Thank you, Dave, very much.
Welcome.
Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you. No other questions. Thanks very much, Dave. We appreciate it. We still got some time. Let's jump into the next one. The next one, since it's been distributed, I think what we can do, again, Mary, if I can have you make some general overview comments, and then we'll just open it up for questions as opposed to go through page by page.
One of the things that over the last 3 or 4 years we've been focused on is accountability and measurement of that accountability. And we have several mechanisms for that, citizen surveys, benchmarking, and in addition to the goals that you, the council, set for us. This is one of our benchmarking methodologies that looks, we participate in a survey that the International City Managers Association has, that over the years we can look at comparing apples to apples in various cities, and we can look at the way they do business compared to how we do business, and we try to make these comparisons at city levels that are similar to ours. It is, and if we see a good idea, we see someone that's doing better than we are, we don't hesitate to call and ask what's driving that performance. We gave it to you and want to give it to you on an annual basis so you can be aware of where we are in comparison to these other cities and the things we're doing. It also gives us an opportunity to identify potential weaknesses and areas that we need to shore up. And so this is our annual presentation to you of highlights. If you're interested in looking at more detail, we certainly have the entire report. And Jill, if you'll kind of manage questions, we'll appreciate that.
Terrific. Any questions? Okay, we appreciate it. I'm sure if people have individual questions.
No, I have one.
Oh, Dr. Archie, please.
Thank you. Page 11, Mr. Ganesh, human resources, turnover rate among all city employees from 2005 to 2007. I just wanted to know that over the same period, the turnover rate among public safety department's employees have been nearly one-third of the rate of all other employees. Can you elaborate on that?
The turnover rate in police and fire has always been very low, and fire even lower than police. And actually, the turnover rate in the city as a whole is on the low side of what an organization would normally expect to stay healthy. So, police and fire ends up being 5%, 4%, 6%, somewhere around there, a very low turnover rate.
Let me go to Ms. Davis, then I'll go to Ms. McDonald.
Thank you, Mayor Nelson. Mayor, here on page 8, and I know that code compliance is a big issue for me. So how will we continue to make sure that we kind of close the gap with some of the concerns, nuisance, how we, the boarded up houses? I just want to make, just for you to talk about a little about that.
Well, I think the investment that you've made, and I forget which page it is, you can see that the investment the council's made in code compared to other cities is substantial. And we believe that that investment and the reallocation of the staff with neighborhood responsibilities will go a long way to getting this done. We're on a good road here. We have to continue and stay the course on code, and we're committed to doing that. And could y'all find me the page I was talking about?
22.
Okay. I just wanted you to see your expenditures based on other cities' expenditures. So, per capita, yeah. So we'll be sure you get a good return on that, and we'll keep you updated on that as we move forward.
With the changes we've seen in both resources and the changes in the organizational approach, this is really the key here.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
Thanks, Ms. Davis. Ms. Madron and Ms. Stalzer.
Thank you, Mayor, and I'll be quick about this. Page 15, do we know why?
And Paul would tell you that overall golf rounds have declined across the country. Sports and recreational activities kind of go in waves, and tennis will be the most prevalent one, and then it'll be golf, and golf is kind of on the decline nationally. This is not terribly out of line, Paul, am I?
Kind of a natural cycle.
Right,
okay.
Yeah, cycle.
And, yeah. Pardon me? Okay, I mean, okay. And then on the very next page, just an update on total miles now that we have on trails. What do we have at Dallas? Is it up to 86? Okay, that's just nice to know when we
right,
got
86.
Okay, excited about page 18 on recycling. Mr. Caraway. All right.
Isn't that, look at that progress that we've
absolutely
made compared to other cities. That's really, we're in the ball game now instead of behind.
And Mr. Caraway has made it, yeah, he has signed on. He has made it public. So we definitely are going to increase that. I understand.
But okay. Are we going to go to once a week trash pickup?
That's the next one. That we've got him to recycle. Hold on.
Actually,
one more. Hold on.
Mr. Medrano has the floor.
Page 26 on Dallas Public Library.
We are behind in hours in branch libraries. That's just a fact. We are behind compared to other communities. One of the ways that we could fix this pretty readily would be to be open on Sundays in all our branches. But
okay,
we just haven't
but
had the funding to do that. That really is, we're behind in the number of hours our branches are open.
Do we know specifically how many hours?
Well, if you added 4 hours in on Sundays in most branches, four or five, you can see you'd be cut up.
Right
caught up
there.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much, Ms. Salazar, please.
And just real quick, on page 19, you give a comparison of how the city leverages the public funds for outside funds, and I think that's a very good job. My question would be if we can get a comparison and maybe bring it to housing on how we compare to other cities as a percent of our budget that our housing is. And I think that might be a good comparison to say that other cities, what they're doing with their budget versus what we're doing and how they leverage.
There's of course more detail behind each one of these, and so we'll bring the detail behind the housing survey to the housing. That's great.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Terrific. Anything else? Please, Ms. Newman.
Mary and Jill, it's duly noted in Forest, and it's duly noted, I'm looking at page 22, Dallas compared to other participants in code compliance. Duly knows we're spending $13 compared to $11.65. The dollar amount is not important. It's how you use the dollar amount. So that's what's critical. So I'm glad the council, and I'm right there with us, in putting the dollars. It's a question of how we do it, though.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. And this accountability scorecard thing that's evolving. Was briefed at Quality of Life
the report card?
The other day. Yes.
You have to have a lot of tools to measure and keep accountability. That's one very high-level tool that we'll be using.
And I think I would recommend, again, that measurement be a little bit broader than just the number of SRs.
That is one measurement tool. Each person has a performance plan, so there are lots of measurement tools.
But, Madam Mayor, Manager, the danger of the code coming out with that report card and having a public document and so forth, it makes a statement of A to C+, I think that was on that list. And I think we got to be very careful about putting something out there and saying that this is what we say we are doing when it may not have a direct correlation to what's going on the ground. Southwest was rated A. I'm sorry, my respective area of the city is not an A.
Mr. Newman, that is the first time we've used those report cards, and they really are not grading the area. They're grading movement and change, and that's the only way I knew how to do it and to show an improvement, and we will not leave those bars where they are. I mean, if they're at A, we're expecting continual change in this organization and improvement all the time. So I don't know any other way to – it's not claiming that area is A. That movement you had was good that time, but we expect more movement the next time. That's the way they focus.
Okay. I'm just saying, I've already gotten comments from constituents saying to me, I just want to make sure.
Right, tell them it's about movement, it's about making improvements.
Constructive feedback that we need to make sure that if we're going to give ourselves a report card, it needs to be very objective. That's all I'm saying. A report card that we're grading ourselves, it needs to be objective and broader. Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it, Mr. Newman. Mr. Kerouac, please.
I'll just follow up and make this comment on this recycle thing.
Bad things in everyone.
Recorder's working. I've tested it at my house, and I put out the trash the other day, and I had so much newspaper and other paper products. Yes, well, I'm very well read, but I had a lot of newspaper and a lot of stuff that was recyclable, and I really had less trash now. So I'm saying to this council and that I'm going to push now for recycling. Oh, y'all do the wave, and because I really think that it does make sense. But I had to first prove it to myself, and it's been proven. That, you know, I can even get to a once a week thing. It's really looking that way. So, and I'm encouraging folks now that I'm on the recycle wagon. So, but you guys need to get some blue cans over in my area real quick. So let's put an extra effort on going over and doing some education about that, because I'm doing better. Okay, I'm through.
Super. Appreciate it. Okay, anything else? Great. It's now 11:51 on October 15, 2008. City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda. First, City of Coppell versus CB Parkway Business Center, etc. City of Dallas versus Stover, et al. City of Coppell versus CB Parkway Business Center, et al. Coppell Independent School District versus CB Parkway Business Center, and legal issues regarding the provision of municipal services to the North Lake area of Texas. Next one, AHL Community Development Court versus the City of Dallas, then City Civil Service Trial Board hearing regarding Renee Dominguez, and finally the City of Dallas versus Hall et al. I anticipate that will be at about an hour. The goal is to be back in here. We've completed the agenda for today. The only thing we'll do is do the afternoon speakers. Hopefully we'll begin that at 1 o'clock. So why don't we go ahead, take about a 10-minute break, meet in the briefing room. Would you like to do that? That's a great suggestion. Finish the speakers now? I think that's a great suggestion. Madam Secretary, you're up. Thank you very much.
Okay. Our first speaker this afternoon is going to be Estella Esperanza. Estella Esperanza. Uzumba, Newegg, Rusty Tomlinson, Gerlin Holland, William Hopkins, Frank Ward, Charles Goodlow, Wayne Wooten.
Y'all ought to stop.
Ms. Wooten, I have my timer here because we don't have it set up on there, so I got the 3-minute timer set up right here.
Well, I don't know. Y'all have took off everything.
You hear it, Steve.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mayor Bethlehem. This is crazy. Now, you know that nobody knows what time y'all closing this meeting at 12 o'clock. You know this is not afternoon speakers. Shut up, Dwayne. You don't need your help.
3 minutes away.
My name is Dwayne Wooten. I live at 4625 Bryant Street. I'm a native born Dallasite. I've been in this city 64 years. Thank you, Ms. Mondrano, for your birthday card. I think we almost have the same birthday, Mr. Natinsky. September 14th. Brzezinski, Natinsky. I can't tell it apart. Y'all know I ain't got no language, so I just do what I can. Anyway, you really caught me off guard, as a matter of fact.
We didn't think that was possible.
You know, I'm very seldom speechless. But, Mayor, I'm speechless right here.
So this is going to have to be a standard operating procedure then.
You can say that again. I didn't even fill up my energy and stuff. So, I'm here to say that I want this city since I'm having more positive attitude this morning. I'm not trying to get to be nobody's friend. I'm too old to be trying to make some money. You know, I'm here for the future. I'm not here for the present. One of my priorities is Miss Georgia Robinson. I feel sorry for Jenny, and I wish y'all let Jenny go. Just let her go. Let her go. Don't hold on to her. Don't let her go. You got movie stars and stuff coming down and talking to you. Let her go. But Miss Georgia Robinson was mauled to death by dogs, and I asked for information concerning that, and no one has given me a response. I want a response. I have a problem with housing for poor people in the inner city of Dallas. That's what I come down here for. I grew up off Pearl and Thomas, Victory Park. I don't know what the victory is yet. I'm trying not to think it's Robert E. Lee coming back, but there's no housing on this side of the city for poverty-stricken people. And that's one of the reasons I come down here. I don't care about y'all having all that money, but me, I didn't come back last week because I thought you were kind of stressed out with all that falling stuff up there. Well, that Wall Street side, I think you needed no more pressure from me, so I let you ride. But it is time for us to be inclusive of everybody in this city. And as I state normally, under segregation, this city was not as racist as it is today. And if I call you a racist, maybe I don't know the definition of it, then I'm not going to do that no more. But if I say that I want better understanding and communication with staff, employees, and citizens of this city, I think that's good for Dallas. Because we do not need prosecutors at Dallas County rechecking the Dallas police to see if a crime has been committed when we can stop it right here. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
That's it?
That's it. Okay. With that, what we'll do is go ahead and let's go into the executive session. As I mentioned, it is now 11:58. I read the cases into the record. What we'll do is we'll just go ahead and finish that right now here so that we can adjourn. Then we'll have lunch afterwards. So we'll go ahead and get everything done now with that. So with that, if we could ask everybody to... If we could ask everybody to leave for now, we're going to go into executive session. Thank you.